and sea. Their mission? To remove Saddam Hussein from power and disarm Iraq of its weapons of mass destruction.
Even Tony Blair now criticising the stance taken by Sir Keir Starmer, who, it is reported, has made a phone call, a grovelling phone call, to the president. Meanwhile, what of the King's visit? In other news, as a social media debate takes place in the House of Commons, it's online safety day here on LBC.
My 14-year-old son, Jules, died at home in 2022, and I believe social media was to blame. I'm Ellen Room, and I'll be speaking to Nick later in the show.
Plus, after nearly a year of new measures for Ofcom, are they actually taking the necessary steps? Those stories and more after the 7 o'clock news.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 7 o'clock, Iranian clerics have named Mujtaba Khamenei as the country's new supreme leader. He succeeds his father, who was killed in joint US-Israeli airstrikes 9 days ago. President Trump says the announcement is unacceptable. Iranian author Tara Kangalu says Mujtaba has long been considered a contender.
He is 56 years old. He never held any government office jobs. He pretty much never worked in the regime. However, he is one of the most influential figures when it comes to the IRGC apparatus.
The price of a barrel of oil has passed $100 for the first time in 4 years. The Strait of Hormuz, a critical shipping route for oil and gas, remains effectively closed because of the conflict. Fears of an energy supply crisis have sent Asian stock markets tumbling in early trading. Speaking to LBC yesterday, the Foreign Secretary Yvette Cooper said Britain has sufficient storage capabilities.
We always ensure that there is proper sustainability. There are longer-term concerns about energy prices. That is significant. Here, of course, we have the energy price cap, so that does insulate us against some of the volatility over the next few months.
In other news, LBC can exclusively reveal only one tech company paid a fine for breaking the Online Safety Act a year after coming into force. Since our first Online Safety Day, Ofcom has issued 6 firms with penalties totalling more than £3 million for things like not putting proper age checks on their sites. But we've learned only £55,000 has been paid. We've been given access to Ofcom's enforcement team. Suzanne Carter leads it.
We don't measure success through fines and the amount we recover. What we do is measure our success through the outcomes that we are driving. And as you said, penalties are just one tool that we have to bring companies into compliance.
And you can hear from Ofcom's chief executive, Melanie Dawes, on Breakfast with Nick Ferrari here on LBC in the next hour. And Scotland's busiest railway station, Glasgow Central, remains closed after a major fire nearby. It broke out at a vape shop on Union Street yesterday. The building, dating back to 1851, has partially collapsed. In the city, the FTSE 100 will reopen later at 10,284. It closed down 129 on Friday. The pound buys $1.32 and €1.15. LBC weather, cloudy but dry for most, some patchy rain in the west, a high of 15 degrees. From Global's newsroom, for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Hans, the GC here. I'm whispering because,
as the queen,
queen of social media, it's about time for my ASGMR series.
So I'm recording this on my phone and then I'm going to use Canva to edit and upload it. Oh, sorry, babes. I'll make that a whisper when I edit it. Anyways, Canva makes social media edits so easy. I'll upload this in a minute. Canva, make everything iconic. How do I stop recording, Darren?
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Good morning to you. 3 minutes after seven on Monday, March the 9th. How to handle a president. The different stances taken by Tony Blair and Sir Keir Starmer. I'll be asking which is going to be the most effective. Question marks now apparently over whether the King's visit should go ahead next month. And other aspects with Iran getting a new leader. Full coverage of that, as I'm afraid the conflagration continues. But here in the UK, it's a key debate on social media in the House of Commons today, following the passage of the legislation coming back from the House of Lords. So we've started another online safety day. You heard on the LBC News Bulletin about the number of fines that have actually been levied and the number of fines that have been paid. Last week, I sat down with the chief executive of Ofcom, the body who should be implementing this, Dame Melanie Dawes.
I think the important thing about fines is the deterrent message that they send as well across the wider industry.
How is it a deterrent if I'm fined and I don't pay?
Well, it's still quite a big deal, actually, if you're a company that's non-compliant with the regulator in the UK.
With children's safety at risk, with young people taking their lives, fines of £3 million levied, £55,000 received. If this was a private company, it would have failed months ago. Coming back to the Iran conflict, what it means for you at home, or at least initially, at the petrol pumps.
Another dramatic start to the week as the oil price spikes and global stock markets brace for a tumble. I'm Christian May from City AM discussing all this with Nick shortly.
And in other news...
Chaos in Glasgow after a fire started at a vape shop caused an historic building to collapse. I'm LBC's Alan Zizinski on the scene.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
How to handle a president? Well, not the way it would appear Sir Keir Starmer is saying, as Sir Tony Blair, or Tony Blair as he was then, says that you have to say in lockstep, as it were. Let's just listen to the two different approaches. I'll take you back to 2003, then Tony Blair making the case for the Iraq war.
This is not the time to falter. This is the time for this House, not just this government or indeed this Prime Minister, but for this House to give a lead. To show that we will stand up for what we know to be right. To show that we will confront the tyrannies and dictatorships and terrorists who put our way of life at risk.
That was then. This is now.
President Trump has expressed his disagreement with our decision not to get involved in the initial strikes. But it is my duty to judge what is in Britain's national interest. That is what I've done, and I stand by it.
Back to 2003. 2 days after that speech from Tony Blair, he was back in the House and indeed a broadcast to the nation.
On Tuesday night, I gave the order for British forces to take part in military action in Iraq. Tonight, British servicemen and women are engaged from air, land and sea. Their mission? To remove Saddam Hussein from power and disarm Iraq of its weapons of mass destruction.
And that was then, this is now part two.
It is vital that we prevent further escalation and return to a diplomatic process. We want to see peace and security and the protection of civilian life.
And perhaps in the sign of the times, that was posted to social media, not broadcast live on television. So Sir Keir finds himself in a bit of a corner because of comments made by Tony Blair, Sir Tony Blair, as he is now, speaking at a private Jewish event on Friday, Jewish news event on Friday, and they are voiced by one of the production team.
I'm not saying anything that I haven't already said to the government. I think we should have backed America from the very beginning. We have got to be very clear about this as a country. We're depending on the American alliance for our country. They're not just an ally, they are an indispensable ally, right? The American relationship matters. It matters particularly today. It's not a question of whether it's this president or that president. If they are your ally and they are an indispensable cornerstone for your security, you had better show up.
To former Conservative MP Sir Ben Wallace, who served as Defence Secretary, also chaired the British Iran Parliamentary Group, and joins me now. What is the best way to handle the US President Donald Trump at this time, would you say, Sir Ben? Good morning.
It's a bit like a Rubik's Cube, I think. Good morning, Nick. I think it's... Look, if we separate the delivery of those two clips you did between a conviction Prime Minister, Tony Blair, who clearly led from his sort of belly and his instinct, and Keir Starmer, who is really a technocrat, who you can see is a bit like a rabbit in the headlights, caught between conflicting cabinet ministers and indeed pieces of legal advice. If we park the delivery aside, I think there is a very difficult challenge for the government. Tony Blair is absolutely right in his observation that the United States currently is our security guarantee and the cornerstone of European security, whether we like that or not. If we don't like it, as I have been campaigning really for ever since I was the Defence Secretary, if we don't like it or we want alternative options when we're in charge of something, we better get investing in our defence, which we haven't done. So from now, for this point, where we are, beggars can't be choosers. In reality, we should have definitely agreed to give the United States permission to use our bases. I think the the spectacle we see at the moment, which was Keir Starmer saying, well, on Saturday you can't use my bases, on Sunday you can, just made us look ridiculous. And we saw the United States asking to use our bases in order to do certain military actions to protect British citizens, both in Dubai, the Gulf, the wider Gulf, and indeed in Cyprus, while we were saying no to them. I mean, that was ridiculous. The regime change part, however, is a much harder part, because it is absolutely clear that Donald Trump doesn't have a plan at all. I mean, at least George W. Bush had a plan. I think it's very clear that Donald Trump has no plan at all of changing this regime. And I think what we're going to see is a spectacular failure in this foreign policy intervention. We're going to see the Gulf states starting to get really annoyed and angry that their economies are being wrecked by a war they didn't ask for. And they'll start quietly and politely, as they do in the Gulf, but eventually they'll say, look, you've wrecked my economy. And I noticed Donald Trump's Truth Social, when he sort of attacked the Prime Minister, said, we've won. He hasn't won anything yet. He might have won something that's very important to Israel, which is the destruction of the nuclear program. And I, you know, Hail Mary to that, and that's a good thing. But the idea that there's going to be a massive regime change, I don't think is going to materialise on the streets of Iran.
So, Ben, you mentioned Cyprus. Can I take you to Cypriot waters? The German frigate, and I apologise in advance for pronunciations here, Norderhein Westphalen has arrived in Limassol. France's Languedoc has sailed to Cypriot waters. Italy is sending the Federico Martinengo. Spain, the Cristobal Colon. And Greece has already dispatched 4 F-16 fighter jets. Meanwhile, HMS Dragon, I think the welders have just gone, but it won't set sail until this week. So, Ben?
Well, I think there are certain things you can fairly criticise the government for, and some things you can't. What you can criticise the government for is, if you remember when they arrived, everything was going to be paused. You know, we know best, we're coming in. The defence spending was paused in the area of equipment, planning and programme. Rachel Reeves saddled the department with major unfunded commitments, pay rises, but also the national insurance consequences that was levied on all the defence contractors. They get to pass that back. So suddenly the department had to find huge cuts, over £2 billion in day-to-day running costs of the department that they hadn't planned for. The only way you save that money, as a defence secretary, I can tell you, is you stop doing things. You stop training, you stop exercising, and you stop your deployments. And we saw from a defence minister recently, an admission that they had stopped doing more training and deployments in the Middle East as a result of that. So the reason HMS Dragon or any other ship wasn't really available on station is this government had put huge amounts of money pressures on the department. They had to cut it. They were less active. That is down to them. It's not about whether you had 20 ships or 10 ships. It's about their direct a saddling of that department with extra money that they're having to cut. They're having to cut £2 billion every year now of day-to-day running costs, and that means operations.
Lastly, Sir Ben, as both a former defence secretary and a former military bloke, what does that do for the UK's standing?
Our standing is tumbling already. When I was defence secretary, we were the second largest funder of GDP in NATO. We are second or third, I think, behind Greece, actually. But we are now down towards 21. We're heading to a 21st in the NATO rankings. We've lost our leadership for now. And unless Rachel Reeves actually does what Germany has done and Poland has done and all the Nordic states and stand up and actually fund our armed forces, both prime ministers will face the difficult problems they faced, as Keir Starmer did with the president on choices. He won't have any choices because we won't have the range of choices for our defence, and also our armed forces will continue to lose their positioning as once the foremost power.
All right, Sir Ben, I will leave it there. Grateful for your time. Sir Ben Wallace, former Defence Secretary, joining us, giving us his take at 7.13. We move to Patrick Coburn, who's special correspondent for the I newspaper, an award-winning Middle East correspondent, written many books on Iraq, including The Occupation, War and Resistance in Iraq. And if I can start with that, Patrick Coburn, what are the lessons to be learnt from Iraq as we view the situation in Iran? Good morning.
Good morning. Well, Iraq was a terrible mess, which should have been obvious when Tony Blair ordered Britain to take part in the invasion, and Iran is even messier and about to get worse. So I think that that's one major lesson. They differ because the campaign against the US, Israeli campaign against Iran, is an air war, which means that they won't be able to change the regime, whatever they say or think. That wasn't true in Iraq. So it's likely to go on a very long time, and it's likely to escalate. So in some ways, it's worse than Iraq.
Well, it has the potential, of course. It's almost double the size population. I have figures of 90 million in Iran, plus 46 million in Iraq. So you could argue that's double the size of the potential problem. What is life like for ordinary folk in Iraq now, Patrick?
Well, it's got a bit better, but it's taken a long time. And, you know, Tony Blair, sort of really from day one, has been in denial of about how wrong things went. I remember a few years after the invasion, he was saying things were getting better in Iraq. It's all worked out at the end of the day, despite no weapons of mass destruction being found. But I was in Baghdad at the time, and the whole place was a bloodbath. So I don't think he's really a credible commentator on what happened then in Iraq or what's happening now in Iran.
What do you make of Sir Keir's stewardship of the United Kingdom's relationship with the US to date?
I think it's probably fairly well balanced. As I said, you know, it's a tremendous mess with no real end in sight. How is this going to end, except getting worse? So you don't want to nail your flag to the mast of a ship when you don't know where that ship is going. And secondly, when that ship is captained by President Trump, who is notoriously mercurial and makes up, changes his mind every day.
Grateful for your time. I will leave it there. Sorry, only for time reasons. Patrick Cockburn, thank you. Special correspondent of the I Paper and award-winning Middle East correspondent. We're already over time. Sorry, Patrick. The question, which is the better way to handle it? The Blair way or the Starmer way? And in other news, as this key debate takes place in the House of Commons over social media, it is Online Safety Day here on LBC.
Ofcom trawls the darkest corners of the internet to build cases against tech companies suspected of breaking the law. I'm LBC's Helen Hoddenott with exclusive access to the investigations unit.
And it's 7:16, LBC News headlines, Dominic Ellis.
Iranian clerics have named Mujtaba Khamenei as the country's new supreme leader. LBC can exclusively reveal only one tech company is paid a fine for breaking the Online Safety Act a year after coming into force. And train passengers are facing disruption after a major fire caused a building to partially collapse close to Glasgow Central Station. LBC weather cloudy but dry for most, some patchy rain for the west, a high of 15 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Long delays continue on the M25 anti-clockwise. This is between junctions 21 at the M1 and 18 at Chorley Wood. It's following an accident, but all the lanes are now back open. Still very slow on the M20 westbound to junction 4 at Leybourne. That queue goes all the way back to junction 6 at Maidstone, and that's also after an accident, but all the lanes are back open. The A13 is blocked westbound at the Pitsey Flyover after an accident, and that's causing delays. The Woolwich Ferry is suspended because of the fog, and also because of the fog, there are some cancellations at London City Airport, and some flights at Gatwick are delayed by about half an hour. On the trains, Chiltern Railway services are suspended between Marylebone and South Ruislip.
This is LBC.
Why are you abseiling down the front of your house, Ross? You have a staircase.
I like doing things the hard way, Albert.
Try something easier, Ross. Get cheaper off-peak energy. It's available at different times, like during the day or weekends. Just get a smart meter and choose a flexible scheme or tariff.
Ooh, I could batch cook some quiche.
Perfect. With a smart meter, getting cheaper energy is easier than you think.
Eligibility varies. Action required. Schemes and tariffs available to selected customers.
This is LBC. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app. Download it now from your app store.
With up to £3,000 every year towards career growth at Amazon, I started in the warehouse, knowing I could train in things like coding or robotics. It turns my job into a career. So it means I can be who I want to be, even if I haven't quite decided who that is yet.
Amazon.
opening doors with up to £3,000 every year towards career growth. Eligibility conditions about type and duration of employment apply.
I'm Leah, and this is my NHS story. I could just feel my body didn't feel right, so my GP referred me to the CDC. Had some blood tests done, and within 24 hours, I had my results. And that just reassured me that I was being taken seriously.
The government is opening new community diagnostic centres, with many already available 12 hours a day, 7 days a week, so the NHS can be there for all of us when we need it. Find your closest one at gov.uk/NHS Fit for the Future, available England-wide.
It's hard to concentrate when you can't shake a health worry. It can feel like there's a wall between you and the rest of the world. Like you can't be fully present.
Hello, AXA Health. How can I help?
If something's playing on your mind, AXA Health support line nurses and counsellors are ready to listen day or night. For cover that cares, search AXA Health Insurance. 24/7 health support line available to all members. Treatment for pre-existing conditions is not covered.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
7:20 is the time. Quickly, just a couple of the front pages for you. This theme of this telephone call allegedly made, well, not allegedly made, Starmer's humbling phone call to Trump is the front page of the Daily Mail. Incompetent Starmer is killing special relationship is the front page of the Daily Express. Even the Daily Mirror, the supporting Labour Daily Mirror, have you learnt nothing, Mr. Blair? That's on the front page. Let's get your reaction. Who should be, which should be the line we take, the Blair or the Starmer line? Colin in Manchester, which would you say, Colin? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Given the choice between those two individuals, Keir Starmer, the way that he's approached this, definitely.
Okay.
And can I just say something? Let me finish one thing and then let me say something else, Nick, on something. I'm going to pull you up on something, if you don't mind.
Yeah, go ahead.
Right. Firstly, Blair took us into a war based on the weapons of mass destruction. Now, was that a lie told to Blair in private by the American government? Or was it not a lie, and he took us into a war knowing full well that there was no weapons of mass destruction?
Well, I don't know, because I wasn't privy...
No, but neither of us were, Nick. That's the whole point.
Right.
The whole point. But that in itself should have been investigated. If they can drag veterans through the courts over incidents that happened, and these veterans are in their 80s, over things that happened in Northern Ireland, and yet the terrorists go free, then Blair should have been dragged through the courts on what he did to the country.
Okay.
Now, secondly.
Yes?
You're quoting something, Nick. You've just admitted, I don't know, I wasn't a party to the conversation that went on. Neither was I. Yeah. Neither was anybody. Neither were you on the conversation that took place between Keir Starmer and Trump. Nobody knows what was said. So to brandish him as grovelling...
No, I said, what's the word? Humbling. Sorry. Humbling. Humbling, I
didn't. No, please rewind. Please rewind and listen to what you said. It was an insult, Nick. An absolute insult.
Well, calm down, Colin. He's a prime minister. That's not an insult. And indeed, one headline says that it was
Nick,
a humbling... No, you've had your say. We'll do it when it's your breakfast show. When it's Colin and Manchester, we'll do it my way. Then I'll come back to you in a moment. One newspaper calls it humbling. I call it grovelling. Given the level of abuse that Trump has levelled at Sir Keir Starmer, what do you think the tone would have been?
I have no idea. I wasn't a party to it.
What? You think it would have been combative? Do you not think now, with a former Prime Minister, even Tony Blair, now Sir Tony Blair, backing Sir Keir Starmer into court, you think he would make a phone call and it would be aggressive?
I have no idea what the conversation was, Nick.
And you think that the relationship, and I think the word special is a bit over, you think the relationship is healthy?
Did you not learn by working for the Sun newspaper?
Pardon me? Did I what?
Did you not learn a lesson by working for the Sun newspaper?
Yeah, I learned a hell of a lot by working for the Sun newspaper. I'm very grateful for what I learned at the Sun newspaper. You're absolutely right.
You do not broadcast things on assumptions.
I'll tell you what, you might find this absolute story. I'll take my advice from others rather than you, Colin, because having been in this 23 years, I think I'll stick to doing what I'm doing. Okay, is that all right with you?
The Sun?
Yeah.
That goes...
Well, why are we talking about... We're meant to be talking about Blair and Starmer. Why do you want to talk about a newspaper? I think we've probably reached the end of the road.
Rewind and listen to what you've said, Nick.
No, I'm very happy. I haven't got time to rewind. And I'm very happy to... Because if you think that the call was anything but... What's the word they use? Humbling. whatever, anything other than that, you are absolutely nuts. The way the relationship is now between the United Kingdom and the United States, as Tony Blair says, and I'm paraphrasing what he said, if it is your closest ally, if it is important for the safety of the citizens of this country, people like you and your family, Colin, if you have a family in this country, that is why you have to be there for your closest ally. That is as simple as that. Colin, have a safe day. We'll return to that a little bit later. Now, let's go to Scotland, where, as you've already heard on the news bulletin, there's a day of absolute travel chaos with a fire at the Glasgow Central Station. LBC Scotland correspondent Alan Zizinski joins us from the scene. Alan, good morning.
Morning, Nick. Yes, I'm looking at a pile of charred, smouldering rubble in front of me, which until yesterday had made up an iconic corner of Glasgow city centre for 180 years. This is the moment the emergency services were called in, as grey smoke was seen billowing out the front of a small vape shop.
There is a massive fire happening in the middle of Glasgow city centre, and next to the subway on... Oh my God, it's like an explosion.
And those explosions, which we understand were potentially lithium batteries, intensified this blaze to a scale which eventually saw it taking hold of the entire building. All four floors were ablaze for hours. There were 18 engines here pumping water out of the River Clyde, trying to tackle it. But eventually, I was one of those who watched it collapsing with the crowds that had gathered here. First a sidewall, then the dome structure on its roof, and then the roof itself. And I spoke to local Labour MSP Paul Sweeney at the cordon.
Devastating to be down here at a so familiar junction. You know, many Glaswegians coming and going on Renfield Street will know that corner very well. It's such an iconic spot with the old Iron Brew sign, of course, that used to loom above it. To see it in this devastated, collapsed state, like a bomb has hit it, is truly devastating.
And while we understand the blaze itself is now under control, Nick, there is still a lot of smoke here. There are still 9 fire engines too. And as you said, this is causing massive travel disruption. Scotland's busiest railway station, which is right next door to this fire, is completely shut. No services are running at all. And many businesses have, of course, been completely destroyed. Brian Gallagher's hair salon on the third floor was one of them.
Just absolutely devastated, and I literally put my whole everything into that salon. My whole family put everything into that salon. The amount of hours I've spent decorating, redecorating, and yeah, it's just absolutely gutting. I'm just completely devastated.
And now the attention is turning to trying to understand exactly how this happened, how it got so bad. And the advice for local people here is to keep your windows shut while the smoke continues to billow.
Alan Zizinski reporting from the scene in Glasgow, 7:27 now. I've told you a couple of times already, there's a key debate today in the House of Commons about social media, and it's LBC's Online Safety Day, a day in which we dedicate our programming to covering the important topic of keeping children safe online. You'll remember we did our first instalment of this in March of last year to mark the moment when regulator Ofcom first started to enforce the Online Safety Act. So what has been achieved in the first year? LBC's Helen Hoddenott was given exclusive access to Ofcom's investigations unit and filed this report.
Ofcom has opened its first investigation.
Since
the Online Safety Act came into force nearly a year ago, Ofcom has launched dozens of investigations into tech companies suspected of allowing harmful content on their platforms.
We may come across child sexual abuse material, pro-suicide, intimate image abuse, pornography, so very serious, quite distressing areas.
We're the first journalists to be given access to Ofcom's investigations unit to meet the people on the front line of the UK's effort to make the internet safe for children. Suzanne Cater heads up the enforcement team and told me why we have to protect the identities of her staff members in this piece.
There are people who violently disagree with the work that Ofcom is doing, and we have seen attacks directly on Ofcom employees online.
There are signs up in designated areas of Ofcom's offices warning that distressing content is being viewed as the enforcement team gathers evidence to build cases against platforms.
At times we do have to engage with some
really, really tough content, and that is very difficult.
There are 50 people on this team.
We could have probably 200 more people, and I could keep them busy for the next 10 years.
How do you feel about the scale of the job?
When you think about it in the abstract, completely overwhelming. The internet is huge and it's always changing, but we are dealing with the task at hand.
The team has opened investigations into 30 tech companies. They've completed 7 of those and issued 6 companies with fines totaling more than £3 million. But only one has paid their fine of just £55,000.
We don't measure success through fines and the amount we recover. What we do is measure our success through the outcomes that we are driving.
For the team here, the measure of success is a safe internet, a goal that motivates them as they trawl the dark underbelly of the online world.
This is Helen Hoddenott reporting. We'll come back to our conversation concerning events in Iran, what it means for the price of oil. I'm afraid you won't be surprised to hear that on so many of the markets it's starting to soar up. And in a related story, should the king now cancel his visit to the United States in April? Well, that's Lib Dems' suggestion, and here's one of their number, Dr. Al Pinkerton.
He's threatening allies. He is belittling Canada. He has eyed up Greenland. He's criticising Britain about a war that he started. And I just don't think you should reward that kind of behaviour with something as significant as a state visit.
We'll speak to Lib Dem party leader Sir Ed Davey later in this hour. And then back to that online safety day. We've had a report there from the events within Ofcom. But what about the money that's actually levied? What of the fines? Is part of my conversation with the boss, the chief executive of Ofcom, Dame Melanie Dawes.
I think the important thing about fines is the deterrent message that they send as well across the wider industry.
But how is it deterrent if I'm fined and I don't pay?
Well, it's still quite a big deal, actually, if you're a company that's non-compliant with the regulator in the UK.
Do you hold with that? If you get a fine and you don't pay, what on earth effect does it have? That's later in the show. It's 7:30. Breakfast with me, Nick Ferrara, here on LBC News Time. Dominic Ellis.
Iran's named a new supreme leader. Clerics have chosen Mujtaba Khamenei. He takes over from his father, who was killed in US-Israeli strikes last week. Overnight, oil prices have soared to about $114 a barrel due to disruptions stemming from the conflict. LBC can exclusively reveal only one tech company's paid a fine for breaking the Online Safety Act a year after coming into force. Ofcom has issued 6 firms penalties totalling more than $3 million for things like not putting proper age checks on their sites. And trains aren't stopping at Scotland's busiest railway station, Glasgow Central, after a huge fire nearby broke out in a vape shop yesterday. No injuries have been reported. LBC weather cloudy but dry for most. Some patchy rain for the west, a high of 15 degrees.
Tom Swarbrick on LBC.
We have a problem with Islamist sympathisers who are very happy, indeed proud, to use the liberties hard won, hard fought for in this country to express yourself freely and openly, to give over a worldview that is completely at odds with those very freedoms. Completely at odds with them. We have a problem.
Tom Swarbrick, Monday to Friday from 4 p.m. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
For GCSE and A-level success, one name stands out. Justin Craig. Small, tailored group tuition that really works. Justin Craig courses consolidate knowledge, boost confidence and improve technique for mocks, assessments and exams. Available in classrooms and online. One-to-one also available. With over 40 years' experience, Justin Craig has helped more than 100,000 students. For more details, visit justincraig.ac.uk. Justin Craig. Tailored for you.
Listeners, we interrupt the airways to share an incredible discovery. The reason why Britain hasn't been so great of late is because the country hasn't been eating enough Weetabix. We must get to work in rebuilding Great Britain, Bix by Bix. By delivering Weetabix to whoever plans the traffic diversions, to delivery drivers who can't seem to find your house, and people who don't stack the dishwasher properly. To Britain, we must say, have you had your Weetabix?
A message from TfL.
I saw him in the local news a few days after. His name's Rakesh. They had to put him into a coma just because I didn't look again at that turning. He had 2 kids. How did I not see his bike ahead of me? Well, I didn't look again. He didn't make it.
Drivers, take another look, not a life. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
7:33, back to your views. Who would you think, who has the better approach to handling undoubtedly a difficult relationship currently with Donald Trump? Tony Blair, Sir Tony Blair as he is now, or Sir Keir Starmer? More of your views in a moment. But let's get into ramifications for all of us. Those of us who do not have to handle a relationship with the US President, but we do have to go and fill up our cars or our vans or motorbikes or whatever it might be. Christian May, Editor-in-Chief at City AM. What's it doing for oil prices? Christian, good morning.
Good morning, Nick. It is going to be a humdinger of a day on global markets. That's including stocks and indeed oil prices, as you've just mentioned. This conflict and its escalation has sent the price of Brent crude to within touching distance of $120 a barrel. That's for the first time since 2022. The spike kicked off last night, and it's worth thinking about precisely why this has happened. Yes, we know that the Strait of Hormuz is de facto closed. Traffic through that, tanker traffic, has come to a standstill. We also see direct attacks on energy infrastructure, US and Israel attacking Iranian oil infrastructure, and by retaliation, Iran attacking oil production facilities in the region. That comes after there had been talk that Iran was going to back off from attacking its neighbours. That doesn't appear to be the case anymore. There have been major production cuts in Kuwait, Iraq and the UAE. And the new hardline leadership of Iran is also sending out a signal about where this conflict could go. Across the markets, I should point out this morning, it is an extraordinary sea of red. Expectations on the futures markets across the US, Asia and Europe. The markets are going to open down and go down throughout the day. There will be volatility, there will be some winners, there'll be some movement, but overall it's a pretty ropey picture for the markets. It's quite a scary picture for oil, and a little surprise therefore that ministers, we understand, are going to be talking today about accessing strategic reserves across different countries in the world, and in this country talking about how the government could intervene to prevent this from seriously spilling over into the consumer economy.
Have we got a deal done as regards the Telegraph Group, Christian?
Yes, that's true. We had been talking about the sale of the Telegraph for some time. There had been a controversial effort by Redbird IMI with a bit of Gulf money behind it. That collapsed. Then the Daily Mail owner, DMGT, swept in and said for 500 million quid, they're going to take it. That was appeared like it was going to be given the green light, albeit with some competition considerations. And now German European media giant Axel Springer has said that for £575 million on the second time they tried to buy the title, they will take it. And that has been agreed. Axel Springer, which owns groups like Politico and Business Insider and German newspaper organisations, have said that they're absolutely delighted to acquire this institution. There'll be a few hurdles to jump through. Daily Mail Group said, oh, what do you expect? They've said competition forces in this country make it harder and harder for media businesses to expand, but they wish the new owners of the Telegraph all the very best.
Thanks for that, Christian. We'll talk around the same time tomorrow. Christian Mayer's editor-in-chief at City AM. Now, by its very nature, we'll never know how many young people have taken their lives as a result of sites they've come on social media. But as a debate takes place in the House of Commons today, after a motion has been sent back from the House of Lords, it's Online Safety Day. And last week, I sat down with Dame Melanie Dawes. Now, she's the chief executive, the boss at Ofcom. It's the job of her and her colleagues to investigate big tech companies who fail to comply with online safety laws. We discussed the fines that have been levied at companies and whether the government is doing enough to support the regulator. But I started off by asking her what she believes Ofcom has achieved in this first crucial year of legislation.
Well, look, it's so great to be able to talk to you about that, because it's been a really full-on year, hasn't it? We first began to enforce against the Online Safety Act last March, and we now have nearly 100 services that we've been investigating. We've levied multiple fines. Some of them have already been paid. And we've actually seen quite a lot of change across the industry in some really important areas. The one I would highlight is the age checks at aged 18 for pornography sites, where we've got now more than 75% of daily visits to porn sites covered by a highly effective age check, which means that children can't stumble across porn in the way that they used to be able to.
You talk about multiple fines. How many fines have been levied?
It's 9 fines now, I believe.
How many investigations have there been?
Well, it's investigations into now nearly 100. It's in the 90s. And that, of course, includes X, where we opened an investigation in January. And it also includes a host of smaller companies, which we deemed to be particularly high risk and who weren't responding to our attempts to bring them into line with the Act. So it includes quite a lot of porn sites, but also some sites which are really dedicated to hate speech and, very importantly, a suicide forum, which has been, you know, really problematic.
Yes, we'll talk about that. What's the amount that has been levied in fines?
It now totals, it's over £3 million. And our biggest fine is £1.35 million, which went out just recently.
And
of course, these are quite small companies, so that's a punchy amount in relation to their total turnover.
Yes, indeed. And of those £3 million, how much has actually been paid? How much has Ofcom
received? We've had one fine paid so far.
Satisfied are you with that?
Well, look, you know, we will see how much payment we get. And you wouldn't expect them all to have been paid already. I think the important thing about fines is the deterrent message that they send as well across the wider industry.
If I'm fined and I don't pay?
Well, it's still quite a big deal, actually. If you're a company that's non-compliant with the regulator in the UK, we do quite often find that companies contest their fines. They may want to go through a legal process to challenge us, which is why, as I say, at this stage, it's not a number that worries me. And the important thing is that deterrent effect. So we've seen a lot of companies decide to just withdraw their service from the UK because they'd rather do that than introduce the safety protections for the public that we're asking for.
I mean, our understanding is that you've had one fine paid of £55,000.
Yeah, that's right.
From an Italian company, if we've got that correct. We're talking with firms such as Meta, who has an annual revenue of $201 billion. Alphabet, you'll know for YouTube, $400 billion. It's an accounting error, isn't it?
Well, the point I've already made is that actually the fines are proportionate to the size of the company. The fines that we've levied so far have mostly been on quite small, all of them actually, on quite small companies, because they're the ones that have chosen to disregard the rules completely in these first months of implementation. But we've got a lot of work going on with the bigger companies as well. We've only just opened up an investigation into X. That was on the 12th of January, following the Grok episode over Christmas. We were the first regulator to act in any country in the world. And, you know, that's a very serious investigation, which we're prioritising.
Is the government giving you enough support as regards the Grok investigation? What would you like to see from them?
Well, we're getting a lot of support from the government. They are absolutely clear that they want us to keep moving fast, and they support very vigorous implementation of the Online Safety Act, which is what we're doing.
But if small companies, one in Italy, I think, that I've never even heard of, ITI Tech Limited, whatever, if they do pay the fines and others don't, why would Bill Gates ever pay a fine? Why would he need to ever worry if the smaller companies don't pay?
Well, because in the end, if we levy a large fine on a large company, no, I don't think it's an if. I think, you know, we already have a big investigation going on into one of the largest services globally. And particularly when it comes to the protection of children, we have been working very intensely with the likes of Meta. So that's Instagram, Facebook, also Snapchat, TikTok, Roblox, where kids really spend their time. And actually, in the next few days, we're going to be coming out with our expectations on those companies for the year ahead, and be really clear that if we don't see action, we don't see the protections, then we will move into enforcement, and that could mean fines.
Do you see, instead of the fine, do you see 10% of turnover? Do you see a day when you will actually seek to levy a fine of that magnitude? And I'm not saying they have done anything wrong, but on a firm like Meta, Alphabet, where they count their profits in the hundreds of billions of dollars, do you see a day when you would do 10% of turnover?
If we saw a harm that was really significant, that wasn't being tackled, and a company that was ignoring the Online Safety Act, then they could well face those most serious penalties. But I would hope that companies will fall short of that. And actually, all of the big companies, what they're saying to us at the moment is, we want to comply. And the question we've got back is, well, show us that you really are. Because they want to be best in class, some of these companies. They're very far from that at the moment.
You mentioned Suicide Forum, and we've talked in the past how you treat this very personally, and you're very strong on this. It's believed it could be linked to 135 deaths in the UK. Mm-hmm. Within the last couple of weeks, you've issued a provisional decision. When did you first get this complaint?
Well, this was our first investigation early April, just less than a fortnight after our powers came into force. So they were our top priority.
So you get the complaint in April? I have to
ask.
No,
we opened an investigation.
You opened the investigation in April.
Only weeks after the Online Safety Act came into force.
But Dame Melanie, it takes until February for results.
No, we've been doing lots since then, Nick. And actually, this is a live investigation and I can't comment on it in detail because it's subject to a legal process and I don't want to undermine that.
So it's not fair for me to suggest it's taken nearly a year for
No,
this.
No, it's really not.
Without prejudicing anything, why?
No.
If it started in early April and we get a result in February, why does that not look like a year?
Well, look, I mean, I think you've had conversations, you've had your teams talking to our guys who run the enforcement today and I hope hope that that's been useful in getting under the skin of this. But what happened last spring and summer was that company did actually geo-block the UK. We saw some progress there, but we were concerned that geo-block wasn't sufficient. And so once that came to light, we reinvigorated our work and are now moving it forward and obviously made a big announcement on that only recently.
So how many criminal investigations has Ofcom launched since the Act was introduced last year?
We don't have the power to launch criminal investigations other than in very, very specific circumstances.
How many
against
have been
individuals?
In those specific circumstances?
There haven't been any that, thus far. But that's, to be honest, Nick, that would be incredibly surprising for us to be launching criminal investigations. Bear in mind, we're not the police.
No, you're not.
We're a civil regulator. It's quite different. Our job is to hold these companies to account for having systems and processes in place to achieve much safer outcomes online. And honestly, you asked me at the very beginning, how do I think it's going? I do not think we could have moved any faster to mobilise this. And the success that we've had, particularly on the porn companies, shows that regulation can work. We're under no illusions about the scale of the challenge that is still there, particularly given the culture that we're facing into in Silicon Valley. We are on it and we will continue to be extremely tough in moving this forward.
As part of the coverage today, we spoke with Ian Russell. You'll be aware he was involved, the founder of the Molly Rose Foundation. He has this question.
I think it's clear that the Online Safety Act is a huge responsibility for Ofcom to enforce. But given that there's widespread public concern that too little is happening, and given that even some MPs are questioning whether the will of Parliament is being implemented, what is Dame Melanie going to do differently in the future to address those two points?
Well, look, we've only just started and, we're not even quite a year in. We're not even at that first milestone. But I've already described some of the progress we've made. A lot of small but risky companies have either changed their processes or they've left the UK or we've got them under active enforcement still. What we're really turning to now is working with these bigger companies on the protection of children. And you'll hear more from us about that in the next few days because it's an absolute priority. And I think Ian Russell is one of the people who really brought that to light and has really, really made it clear to everybody what was going on for teenagers and the harm that was being caused.
Can you give my listeners an idea of the average length of an investigation? How long does it take? Broadly, we're talking about, I think you said 9 have been completed. So how long do you allow?
Some have been closed where we've seen progress and where they've actually implemented things that we were asking for. So it's not just 9. It usually takes several months because what you have to do, first of all, is you open it. You've got to have grounds for that. And then you've got to get the information that you need. And this is a completely novel field, of course. No one's done it before. No one's investigated these services for these harms. So that is not a set of questions that anyone's ever gone through before. It's not like, the police investigating criminal damage or whatever. They know what that looks like. When you're investigating online safety, it's brand new. So we have to get that information and then we move as quickly as we can to present back to the company what we think. And then, of course, quite rightly again, they have a chance to represent themselves back to us and agree or disagree with what we're saying. And that's why it does take a while to run through. But what we mustn't do is rush it and then fail. That would be the worst possible outcome.
That's the first part of my interview with the Ofcom boss, Dame Melanie Dawes. In the second part, we explore the fact that as recently as last November, she had a letter from the government expressing their disappointment with the speed in which they were moving. Should let you know, that was recorded last week. Ofcom has subsequently been in touch since that interview to clarify more than £3 million in fines have been issued, 11 fines in total against 6 companies. Just a point of clarification there. Coming up after the news, the call for the King's visit. No King's speech in the US. The visit to be cancelled, or at least postponed, probably. We'll hear from the Lib Dem leader, Sir Ed Davey, on that. 7:48 LBC News headlines. Dominic Ellis.
Iran has named Mujtaba Khamenei as the country's new supreme leader. LBC can exclusively reveal only one tech company has paid a fine for breaking the Online Safety Act a year after coming into force. And trains aren't stopping at Scotland's busiest railway station, Glasgow Central, after a huge fire nearby. LBC weather cloudy but dry for most. Some patchy rain for the west, a high of 15 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Severe delays continue on the M25 anti-clockwise from junction 21 at the M1 to 19 at Watford following an accident. The A13 is partially blocked now westbound at the Pitsey flyover, and that's causing severe delays. The Woolwich Ferry is suspended because of the fog. Also because of the fog, there are delays and cancellations at London City Airport, and some flights at Gatwick are delayed by about half an hour. On the trains, Chiltern Railway services are suspended between Marylebone and South Ruislip. Southern can't run between Sutton and West Croydon because of an ongoing investigation. And on the underground, there are severe delays on the Piccadilly line, but trains are going to and from Heathrow, and also minor delays on the Circle and Hammersmith and City lines.
LBC.
Get 3 months half price when you switch to an unlimited SIM with Three. That means quick streaming, faster downloads, and more money to spend on the things you love. Join the UK's fastest 5G network and get your unlimited SIM today. Buy now in store or see 3.co.uk.
Unlimited 24-month light plan. Proof of switching required. Based on Ookla speed test intelligence data 2H 2025. All rights reserved. Subject to credit checks and terms.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060 973. LBC.
A message from TfL.
I saw Alicia's photo in my newsfeed. All I can think of is her family. How they're getting on. If they're getting on. I didn't look when I pulled out. And she never made it home. Sounds crazy, but it felt like her motorbike came out of nowhere. But I know the truth. I didn't look again.
Drivers, take another look, not a life. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters.
It's hard to concentrate when you're worried about your health. It can feel like there's a wall between you and the rest of the world. Like you can't be fully present.
Hello, AXA Health. How can I help?
At AXA Health Insurance, we build our teams with people who care. So when you need us, we're here to support you. For cover that cares, search AXA Health Insurance. Pre-existing conditions are not covered.
Wrong tool for the job? Don't make that mistake with your van. Get up to 30% off selected new Toyota vans and pickups with a warranty up to 10 years or 100,000 miles with every qualifying routine service. Visit your nearest Toyota centre or visit toyota.co.uk/van savings for more details. Savings on selected vans and pickups ordered by the 31st of March 2026. UK residents, see toyota.co.uk for full details. T's and C's apply.
Hi, I'm looking for a pair of jeans.
Right. Low slung, slouchy, wide leg, bower leg, curved leg, flared, straight or skinny?
Blue?
Fashion. It's hard to keep on top of. Other things, like the upcoming changes to renting, are a bit easier. As a landlord, you will need to get on top of these important changes. They will affect how you manage your tenancies. Act now. Read the guidance at gov.uk/renting is changing.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
It's 8 minutes before eight, and back to events in the Gulf and indeed how they're spreading across the rest of the world and the possibility that the King's visit to the United States, scheduled, of course, for next month, should be delayed. Well, let's put that to Sir Ed Davey, who's the leader of the Liberal Democrats and joining me now. I understand that's your suggestion. Sir Ed, what would that achieve? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Well, I just think it'd be so totally wrong of the Prime Minister, Keir Starmer, to advise the King to put himself in such an embarrassing situation. I've been worried about this state visit for some time with the comments that the President's made against Canada, where, remember, Commonwealth ally, the King is head of state in Canada. Then the comments that the President made about British troops in Afghanistan. And now what this appalling illegal war that is going to damage British families and our economy, and the words that Donald Trump's been using now, just I think they're just inappropriate, and I just think he's lost control. And I think the Prime Minister should not put the King in such a difficult position.
Do we see the United States as an ally, Sir Ed?
Long term, yes. Long term, I've always been a supporter of the UK-US relationship. Really, really important. The problem is you have to call the situation as you see it. And regrettably, this president not only damages our economy with his tariffs, hurting free trade, not only doesn't he stand properly by Ukraine, who've been illegally invaded by Russia, you know, now he's entering into a reckless war that everyone, all your listeners will still be here, will be feeling it. You know, the petrol price is going to go up. We've seen oil barrel go over $100. The energy bills will go up. And I just think we have to call it as is. And I'm just really, actually, I'm also cross about those British politicians, the Conservatives, Kemi Badenoch and Reform's Nigel Farage, who seem to be cheerleading Donald Trump as he takes the world into this damaging situation.
They're not, of course, the only ones. The comments that were reported over the weekend by the Telegraph and the Mail concerning Sir Tony Blair as Prime Minister. He does say, if you have an alliance with someone as important as the United States, you had better be there when they ask you to turn up. Surely that's correct, Sir Ed?
No, it's absolutely not. He was wrong over Iraq. And if you remember, there was an Iraq inquiry, the Chilcot inquiry, which spent 6 years looking into this. Its conclusion on the special relationship was really clear, that it did not require unquestioning agreement between the UK and the US. And indeed, that inquiry, 6 years long, identified a number of occasions where one country, either UK or the US, had not gone to war with the other, and it had not damaged long-term diplomatic relations. It quotes Vietnam and the Falklands War. So it is right when we disagree with the United States not to be there. Tony Blair is absolutely wrong about that. And, you know, I don't think we should be outsourcing British foreign policy to Donald Trump. It's not patriotic. It's the wrong thing to do.
You reference Canada. Of course, since those rather bizarre comments that Donald Trump wanted to take Canada over, we have seen photographs of him with Mark Carney, the Prime Minister, shaking hands and smiling and sort of embracing. So isn't that the way to deal with these issues, to keep the relationships going, to talk?
Well, where you can. I'm not suggesting that Keir Starmer doesn't meet...
Well, it would be quite an aggressive gesture, Sir Ed, to cancel the King's visit.
Well, I think it's the right thing to do.
And how would you do it?
It's the advice of the key of the Prime Minister to the King. So it's Keir Starmer ultimately who bears responsibility. And you know, my strong view is that you shouldn't put our King in an embarrassing situation. And increasingly, it's quite clear that Trump is out of control. I've mentioned his remarks about our troops in Afghanistan. I've mentioned his remarks, outrageous remarks,
yes,
about Canada.
Indeed.
So
yes.
I just think it were wrong, Nick, and I feel really strongly about this. Our King, you shouldn't put him in difficult situations. And if he has to go, in April to the United States, it will put him right in the middle of a highly political situation. I just don't think that's right.
Lastly, and you might say, well, so be it, but that would probably put Donald Trump offside for the full length of his term.
Well, I don't think he's onside. I've been suggesting from the very day that he got inaugurated.
The King and the royal family, in fairness, Ed.
Yeah, but he doesn't treat the Britain as better as a result, does he? He puts tariffs on our industry. He undermines us. I really regret this, Nick. Mm-hmm. I've supported our relationship with the United States for many, many years, but this is a president who has to be called out. He's corrupt, he's immoral, and he's reckless with his policies. It will damage every listener. Will now see their petrol prices go up, their energy bills go up, and that's because of Donald Trump and the British politicians who keep cheerleading for him.
Grateful for your time, Sir Ed Davey, leader of the Liberal Democrats. Spelling out the rationale for postponing the King's visit, let's get your reactions on that. 3 minutes before 8 is the time. Let's pick up on our first conversation, which is the way to handle a president. Do you take the Starmer approach? Do you take the Blair approach? Jerry in Croydon says, right now we have the worst PM of the UK in Keir Starmer. The best was Harold Wilson, and the worst US president is Donald Trump, and the best was Barack Obama. Mike in Crawley says, the UK and the US, imagine a marriage. The stronger partner says to the weaker, do as I say and I will love you. Disagree with me and you'll suffer the consequences. That, in anyone's book, is not a partnership. It's an abusive relationship based on fear and threat. Is that what Tony Blair wants? I spend a fair degree of my duties dealing with bullies. I remind you, Mike was in law enforcement. He was a police officer. And those who thought Mike was right. And I'm sad to say this is the path America has taken under Trump. And I do not want my country abused.
Brian says, the contrast with Blair is striking. We really don't need another illegal war. One was a mistake. Two would look like carelessness. Jason in Plymouth, as an ex-soldier who served in Gulf One, we all knew two was wrong, but we respected going to war for Blair. Starmer is just a wet wipe. Tanya says, we all know Tony Blair's instinct was what that was worth. Glad Keir Starmer hasn't followed Trump into his war. It's all being done for Israel. Rhiannon in Huddersfield, Tony Blair is widely considered to be a war criminal following Iraq, so I'm not sure we should be looking to him for guidance. And lastly, this comes from Vincenzo in Larkhall. Are we really doing this? Are we listening to Tony Blair on his take on Iran? What's next? A book of childcare written by Ian Huntley, who, of course, I'm pleased to say, lost his life over the weekend. And I know you should never think ill of others, but for that particular individual who murdered those two schoolgirls, his end was probably justified the right way that that finished. Conversation moves on. Coming up after the news, we're hearing from the government about a new social cohesion plan to bring communities together. But in other news...
Posing as a 13-year-old, we've repeated our experiments to explore the sort of content a young person could be exposed to on the social media site TikTok. I'm LBC's Henry Riley with the details.
And as part of that, we speak with an online safety campaigner.
My 14-year-old son, Jules, died at home in 2022, and I believe social media was to blame. I'm Ellen Room, and I'll be speaking to Nick later in the show.
Plus, of course, keeping an eye on events in Iran as they elect their new leader and those oil prices soar. But 8 o'clock news on LBC is next.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 8 o'clock, Iran has named eight new supreme leader. Clerics have chosen Mostaba Hamanayi. He takes over from his father, who was killed in US-Israeli strikes last week. Overnight, oil prices have soared to about $114 a barrel due to disruptions stemming from the conflict. Former Tory Defence Secretary Sir Ben Wallace has told Nick it's unclear how America plans to end the war.
I think it's very clear that Donald Trump has no plan at all of changing this regime. And I think what we're going to see is a spectacular failure in this foreign policy intervention. We're going to see the Gulf state starting to get really annoyed and angry that their economies are being wrecked by a war they didn't ask for.
Sir Keir Starmer will seek to reassure the British public as the conflict enters its 10th day. The Prime Minister spoke to Donald Trump yesterday, a day after the US President again criticised the UK's response. Lib Dem leader Sir Ed Davey has just told Nick Sir Keir should call off the King's state visit to the US in April.
Well, I just think it'd be so totally wrong of the Prime Minister, Keir Starmer, to advise the King to put himself in such an embarrassing situation. I've been worried about this state visit for some time with the comments that President's made against Canada, where, remember, Commonwealth ally, then the comments that President made about British troops in Afghanistan, and now what this appalling illegal war that is going to damage British families and our economy.
In other news, LBC can exclusively reveal only one tech company has paid a fine for breaking the Online Safety Act a year after coming into force. Since LBC's first Online Safety Day, Ofcom has issued six firms with penalties totalling more than £3 million for things like not putting proper age checks on their sites. But only 55,000 of that has been paid. Speaking to Nick, Ofcom's chief executive Melanie Dawes has defended that.
This is one of the most challenging jobs I think that you can imagine in regulation. And the Online Safety Act is more ambitious than any other global set of rules. So it's a really, really big task. I'm proud of what my teams have achieved in the first year, but we're absolutely clear that we need to keep on moving.
And you can hear more of Nick's interview with Melanie Dawes in the next hour here on LBC. And trains aren't stopping at Scotland's busiest railway station, Glasgow Central, after a huge fire nearby. It broke out in a vape shop yesterday. No injuries have been reported. In the city, the FTSE 100 just reopened at 10,284. It closed down 129 on Friday. The pound buys $1.32 and €1.15. LBC weather, cloudy but dry for most. Some patchy rain in the west, a high of 15 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
If you want to save a few quid, British Gas have a way. You get half price Lecky and it's called Peak Save. On every Sunday, it's the smart thing to do if you're regular folk or furry and blue. 11 till 4, let the good times begin. You could charge up the car or take the dryer for a spin. Half price electricity, what joy that brings. With British Gas Peak Save, we're taking care of things. T's and C's apply, eligible tariff and smart meter required.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Good morning, 3 minutes after 8, Monday, March the 9th, coming up in this hour. You'll hear from a senior member of the government, a plan to bring about social cohesion, help communities come together and tackle extremism. Because there's no way we can do with it. We'll hear more from that later in just a few moments' time. In other news, as Online Safety Day, of course, that debate takes place in the House of Commons.
Ian Russell's daughter took her own life after viewing harmful content on Instagram. I'm LBC's Helen Hoddenop watching the story of his fight against tech giants with him nearly 10 years after her death.
Plus the extraordinary comments from what was tipped for an Oscar, Timothy Chalamet, of course, star of Marty Supreme, commenting on works of art such as... Madame Butterfly, the opera or ballet. No one cares about opera or ballet, he says. Do you? That's later in the hour.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
I'm afraid the length and breadth of Great Britain or the British Isles on the weekend, we saw violence, we saw extremism. Whether it was demonstrations in London about the situation, the removal of an Ayatollah in Iran from pro-Iranian demonstrators and those who want to see the return of the Crown Prince or the King, or in Scotland, what kicked off in that football match between Rangers and Celtic, there is not a lot of social cohesion. So what of a plan to try and help with that? Well, the government is looking to expand powers to tackle extremism, setting up a whistle-blowing route for university staff, giving the Charity Commission powers to shut down charities that are causing offence. We'll hear more from the government through the course of the day. But let's turn now to Secretary of State for Housing, Communities and Local Government, Steve Reid, who joins me now. Secretary of State, what is it that you can tell us at this point about these plans? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. It's good to be here with you. And I think you're right. People are aware of some of these forces that are trying to pull communities apart, trying to pull people apart from each other. And we call that social cohesion. We need, as a government, to make sure that we're doing what is necessary to tackle the problems causing those divisions, but also supporting people to come together. So, you know, some of the points that you just made, I won't repeat those, but, you know, we inherited a policy from the previous government over asylum seeker hotels that have proved very divisive in their localities. So the government needs to take action to tackle the use of hotels for those purposes. But we also can do more to bring communities together. So you take our Pride in Place programme, for instance, which provides up to £20 million to up to 300 of our most held back communities. Local people will get to choose how that money is spent to improve their area and pride back into the area. Now, whatever backgrounds people have living in those places and however different they are, they all have a shared interest in making their community, their hometown, as successful and prosperous as it can be. So by putting in place funding to support initiatives like that, we're building the bridges that bring people back together again.
How much money are we talking about, Secretary of State?
Well, in that case, it's £5 billion. But this isn't just a single funding pot. This is an approach that we want to take all the way across government. So let's take extremist hate preachers, for instance, who might be coming into the country to sow division. The Home Office is strengthening the watch list so those individuals can be kept from coming into our country. The Charities Commission will be given more powers to close down charities, organisations masquerading as charities that are actually spreading hatred and division. So this is something that will affect the whole of government, not just one department.
And how quickly might some of those charities be closed? Once a case is proven, how quickly might some of those charities be closed down?
Well, we're publishing the report today. There will be a consultation, a review, based on it. The powers that will go to the Charities Commission will work through with the relevant government department and them, but we want to see this brought in as quickly as it can be. There are many people, many forces some here, many abroad, that want to pull our society apart, to weaken the country. And we know that the UK is strongest when we all stand together and we recognise what we have in common, not just those things that make us different from each other.
How will we know if these initiatives that you're outlining through the course of the day, how will we know if they're working?
Well, we'll be publishing proposals for a social cohesion framework. Really, that's a series of different measures that we can look at to give information as to whether the country is more united, whether social cohesion is strengthened or not. But fundamentally, I mean, for me, I think this is something people feel or don't feel. You see it on your own doorstep. You see it in your own community. If you've got people, you know, coming into the country and they can't, for instance, speak English, how can you have a functioning community where people don't share a single language? So there will be more focus on learning the English language, so we have a shared language. But also it protects individuals who are coming here that may be experiencing quite often quite severe problems or forms of abuse. They can't report it if they don't have a shared language. Now, when I was younger, when I was a student, I used to volunteer to teach English to refugees at the Northern Refugee Centre in Sheffield. That was great because it helped teach people English, but I, as the volunteer, also learnt a lot about, in this case, of the Vietnamese people that I was teaching English to, and I found that very enriching for my life. So I think there are benefits all any way that you look at this, Nick.
All right. You talk about that. You'll be aware your colleague Shabana Mahmood brought in the proposal last week, the paying up to £40,000 for migrants to leave the country. That caused a degree of controversy within your party. Are you fully in support of that plan?
Yeah, absolutely in support of that. You know, if people come into the country and they don't have a right to be here, then they should be returned. And I think the figure is right. About 60,000 individuals in that circumstance have now been removed since the general election, which is a quite significant increase. That's the right thing to be. But at the same time, we always have been and want to remain a compassionate and welcoming country for those people who do have a right to seek refuge here.
Secretary of State, you'll be aware that the mother of murdered teenager Brianna Gay has urged MPs to back a Commons vote to protect children from social media harms without delay. This is as it comes back to your house from the House of Lords, and indeed LBC is campaigning about online safety. Can I get a word from you on the importance of that vote today, Secretary of State?
Well, that's right. I mean, we do need to do whatever we can to protect young people in particular, but the whole population from the kind of harms that we see on social media. And of course, we're consulting now on a ban on social media for under 16s, and that consultation will continue and will be published. But even within the social cohesion action plan that we're announcing today, there are also proposals to give people more control of the algorithms that direct content to them, so we can influence what we see and what we don't see, so you're not targeted with horrific abuse that you have no interest in looking at.
In other news, and you won't be surprised I'm taking you off to the Middle East, the Ayatollah's son, Mojtaba, if I'm saying that correctly, is now the new supreme leader of the Islamic Republic, but the US and Israel say he needs to be removed from his post. Does the United Kingdom concur?
Well, you know, I've seen this news as well, and of course he, as the son of the former supreme leader, was fully part of the regime that was carrying out such atrocities against their own people. I'm sure the Iranian people, just like people everywhere, would much rather choose their own leader than have someone imposed on them in this way. But whoever the supreme leader of Iran is...
Does the UK agree with Israel and the United States that he should be removed? That was my question.
Well, the UK believes that the Iranian people should choose the government that they want, not have it imposed on them. But whoever is the supreme leader needs to stop this reckless attacks on countries all across the Middle East, and to whose defence the United Kingdom has now come.
Well, you say the defence has come. If we go to waters around Cyprus, a German battleship has arrived. Soon a French one and a Spanish one will be there this week. Do we know when HMS Dragon will actually set sail?
Well, I believe it is due to set off this week. But, of course, the UK has been making preparations for months now in anticipation of anything that could happen in the Middle East.
We've got thousands... Why was HMS Dragon not ready to sail immediately?
I believe it was undergoing maintenance. But there are, we've got thousands of additional personnel in the area. We've got fighter jets in the area. We've got Wildcat helicopters in the area. And we've got jets in the air right now taking down drones. They're attacking Britain's allies, British nationals, and our assets in the region. So I think that shows a very high degree of preparedness for what eventually did happen in Iran.
On a related conversation, you'll have seen Donald Trump posting or saying over the weekend, the United Kingdom, our once great ally, maybe the greatest of them all, is finally giving serious thought to sending two aircraft carriers to the Middle East. That's okay, Prime Minister Starmer. We don't need them any longer, but we will remember. How do you react to that, Mr. Reid?
Well, I mean, Donald Trump has previously used colourful language, so I don't think any of us will be surprised about that. As I understand it, there was a very constructive conversation and call between our Prime Minister and the US President last night. But, you know, sometimes there will be differences of opinion between the leaders of our two countries. But the special relationship is deep and it's abiding, and it continues through the security cooperation and coordination we're seeing right now between the US and the UK.
And Mr. Reid, there are disputes between leaders of your party, a former leader and a current leader, about how to handle President Trump. Sir Tony Blair, was he right?
Well, that of course happens. That of course happens as well, and Tony Blair is entitled to his view. I happen to think on this occasion he's wrong. It's the current Prime Minister and the current government that will take decisions about what's in our interest, and we do of course learn lessons from what happened with Iraq when Tony was Prime Minister.
We're likely to hear from the Prime Minister later today on the impact of the Middle East war at home. It could of course see oil price go north of $100 a barrel. We need to get back into the North Sea. Drill, baby, drill, don't we?
Well, we do need to keep a very close eye on what's happening and any potential impact on the cost of living here at home. Now, on your point about the North Sea, any oil that's coming out of the North Sea, and of course all the existing contracts for drilling are still continuing there, it doesn't reduce prices because oil prices are set globally. So what's happening in the Middle East would affect prices for North Sea oil, so there's no benefit from that. What would really benefit the country in the long term is switching away from dependence on fossil fuel and moving to clean energy, wind, wave, solar, nuclear, so that we're in charge of our own energy and not dependent on what happens in other regions of the planet. And that, of course, is what the government's doing.
Lastly, it's the first time we've spoken since the local elections story. You had written in January in a newspaper that the elections were for short-lived zombie councils. They divert scarce resources away from frontline services like fixing potholes and social care. You subsequently reversed your decision. How much has that cost?
Well, it didn't cost.
Now put those local elections. There have been figures of tens of millions of pounds. What is the cost now to restore?
That's not true, Nick. It was the elections were always scheduled to go ahead, apart from for a 3-week period. So the councils had always been planning to carry out those elections, and then we got legal advice to say that they needed to go ahead, even though the councils were only existing for 1 year.
Why didn't you seek that advice beforehand?
Oh, I did. The legal advice changed, Nick, and sometimes it does, but you have to respect the legal advice when you get it. But the elections will be going ahead.
Did it change because Reform UK had taken the legal advice that said rather different? That's the reality of it, isn't it? You were bullied into standing down, weren't you?
No, it had nothing to do with that. The legal advice changed, and I have to respect the legal advice. So the elections will go ahead to councils that will then be abolished the year
after. What is the cost of mounting those elections that had not been foreseen already? That there were figures of millions of pounds that this would cost.
No, that isn't correct, Nick. The elections had always been intended to go ahead, so the councils had already been preparing for them, so there's no additional cost. Where I had concerns was that having elections to councils that would only exist for one more year would distract from the important work of going through local government reorganisation
so
and putting
no
in place
additional
the new
costs.
Councils.
It's wrong to say there's any additional cost of any of these local authorities.
From the election cancellations, there is not additional cost because they were always due to go ahead anyway.
Grateful for your time talking about the new cohesion plan. Thank you, Steve Reid, who is Secretary of State for Housing, Communities and Local Government. Coming up later in the hour, here's comments made by actor Oscar frontrunner Timothy Chalamet speaking to Matthew McConaughey for an interview with Variety.
And I don't want to be working in ballet or opera or, you know, things where it's like, hey, keep this thing alive, even though no one cares about this anymore. All respect to the ballet and opera people out there.
No one cares about ballet or opera? We'll take your views on that later in the hour. The 8:15 LBC News headlines, Dominic Ellis.
Speaking to Nick, a cabinet minister says the UK is keeping a close eye on oil prices after they skyrocketed overnight due to the Iran conflict. LBC can exclusively reveal only one tech company's paid a fine for breaking the Online Safety Act a year after coming into force. And train passengers in Scotland are facing disruption after a major fire caused a building to partially collapse close to Glasgow Central Station. LBC weather cloudy but dry for most, some patchy rain in the west, a high of 15 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Traffic's being held on the Essex stretch of the M25 anti-clockwise at junction 29 at the A127. It's following an accident and there are delays from junction 30 at the A13. On the A13, there are severe delays westbound to the Pitsey Flyover and that's following an accident. Because of the fog, there's no Woolwich Ferry running, and also because of the fog, there are delays and cancellations at London City Airport and also some delays at Gatwick Airport as well. Southern trains aren't running between Sutton and West Croydon, and Chiltern Railways can't run between Marylebone and High Wycombe. It's because of an ongoing investigation. And on the Underground, there are severe delays on the Circle and Hammersmith and City lines.
This is LBC.
Okay, that's six of the ragu and the linguine. Make a move, everyone, please.
The customers are rolling in at Stefano's new restaurant, so he needs another chef. Someone with a cool head and an appetite for success.
More flour in the bechamel, let's go.
Indeed can help him find great people fast.
I need Indeed.
Indeed you do. Sponsor a job on Indeed to unlock more tools that save you time and help you hire quality candidates. To start hiring, visit indeed.com/try today.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060 973 LBC.
Aye. I'm looking for a pair of jeans.
Right. Low slungs, slouchy, wide leg, bower leg, curve leg, flared, straight or skinny?
Blue?
Fashion. It's hard to keep on top of. Other things, like the upcoming changes to renting, are a bit easier. As a landlord, you will need to get on top of these important changes. They will affect how you manage your tenancies. Act now. Read the guidance at gov.uk/renting is changing.
Bring your pensions together with PensionBee and take control of your retirement. Because when your pension is in a good place, you're in a good place. When investing, your capital is at risk.
Jay here knows that Zoopla can provide valuations for any home in the UK, so we can see what that new couple across the road might have paid.
Ooh la la.
Have a nose at what the curtain twitchers next door could sell for. And even see what his own place is worth.
Cool, look at that.
Plus, Zoopla lets you find and compare local estate agents if you do decide to sell up. Think of all those new neighbours you'll be able to snoop on, Jay. If you want to know, just ask Zoopla.
A Thameslink train is a place where you can have more me time. A chance to skip traffic and glide to wherever you need to be. With headspace to focus on more important matters. Like if that cloud is a starfish or sunflower. Fast journeys without the rush with great deals at thameslinkrailway.com. Terms apply.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
8:20. Now, an aspect of this Middle East conflict was the fact that the King is due to, or is the fact that the King is due to visit the United States next month. That was something that we discussed right at the top. Now it's gained considerable weight, and quite rightly, because the leader of a political party, who has far more contribution than I do to this debate, leader of one of the political parties, says it should be postponed. It's Ed Davey who told me, leader of the Dems, of course, remind you, who told me in the previous hour.
Well, I just think it'd be so totally wrong of the Prime Minister, Keir Starmer, to advise the King to put himself in such an embarrassing situation. I've been worried about this state visit for some time with the comments that President's made against Canada, where, remember, Commonwealth ally, then the comments that President made about British troops in Afghanistan, and now what this appalling illegal war that is going to damage British families and our economy.
Let's see what you make of that. Steve in Doncaster. Steve, the King, does he go? The King's speech in the US or not? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. In my opinion, I think we're missing a trick here. I don't want to politicise everything, but It's just a simple health and safety. If you think about the King and putting him into a situation with the world's number one target for Iran and their proxies.
Putting him alongside Donald Trump, just to clarify. Yeah, I see.
Yeah, that's the point. It's such a volatile situation. Would we really want to put a member of the royal family into that mix at the moment?
The fact of the matter is they were trying to shoot President Trump when he was just the candidate. Now he is, but he's always going to, I think, attract that level of hostility probably much through his entire presidential career, and some might argue even afterwards. So that would probably, that argument would hold for all time, wouldn't it, Steve?
It would, and I totally get that, I understand it, but we never thought 9/11 would happen. If you think putting Trump and the King into one situation, it's a target that possibly would be very, very tempting for some of the people over in the Middle East.
I hear what you're saying. Before I let you go, in the first hour of the show, we were talking about which is the correct stance to take towards Donald Trump. Is it the one taken by Tony, or to US President, I'm sorry, is it the one taken by Tony Blair and the support he gave to George W. Bush, or is it the one by Sir Keir Starmer and the rather muted support he's given Donald Trump? Which is the better course to follow, would you say?
For me, Starmer. I'm not a huge fan, but I think at this political time, he's taking the right stance for the right reasons. And I think he'll be proven to be right in the future.
And bear in mind, just lastly, Sir Tony Blair said, don't send troops in, don't say that you're going to invade Iran, but if your ally asks to use the air bases, and your ally is important for your own protection of your own citizens, i.e. the US is quite important, surely that adds up then? No?
No, not in Blair's case. Okay. I think he's made a name for himself in the past, and we all realise what he's done. And he's wanting to be on this peace board of Trump, so he's going to back him up for help.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right on all those points. Steve, thanks for covering those two issues. Martin says, Ed Davey is a total irrelevance and should have resigned when his own party, with his own part in the post office scandal. His opinion should be viewed through the prism of his continued passion for his own publicity. Nick in Gillingham, not a lot of support and not a lot of sympathy here. God forbid the King has to do anything he's not happy with. Welcome to the real world. In reality, Starmer has made the biggest mistake of his career in not backing Trump. Whether we should or shouldn't have gone to war with him, unless we're going to increase our defences to be able to look after ourselves, we need the US in a big way. We're now a sitting duck waiting to be picked off by anyone who fancies it. Trump will remember, the King shouldn't go, but I think we need someone to help smooth this mess over before it gets out of control. Nick, I'm with you. I stress, Tony Blair will be forever tainted by the Iraq conflict. That is a fact. But when he says as regards Iran, he's not talking about boots on the ground. He's not talking about joining a force as he did in Iraq. He is talking about when your closest ally says, can we use those air bases? And that ally is crucial for the defence of your own country. That, to me, colours it in a slightly different way. And we'll take more of your views on that in a moment. As I've told you, it's a key day today in the House of Commons. Indeed, the campaigner, the mother of Brianna Ye, is going to be urging MPs to protect children from social media harms without delay and putting a coalition together, urging them to vote to reject the government's consultation on social media, because it is dragging. That does mean, and as I've told you already in the course of this conversation, we'll never know the full number, but edging towards 200 children are known to have taken their lives as a result of influences they've found on social media. And this plays very much into the next part of our online safety day, because as a result, few people feel the urgency to protect children online as keenly as Ian Russell, and I have had the privilege of meeting and indeed interviewing Mr. Russell on a couple of occasions. He's the father of 14-year-old Molly, who you will recall took her life in 2017 after being exposed to harmful content online. Well, a powerful docudrama is now airing on Channel 4, telling the story of his, Mr. Ruffles, remarkable fight against the tech giants of Silicon Valley. Remember, they count their profits in the hundreds of billions of dollars. Hundreds of billions of dollars. So what of this docudrama? LBC's Helen Hoddenott watched the film. It's called Molly versus the Machines, with Mr. Russell, and then filed this report.
If it can happen to our family, then it could happen to anybody.
On the 21st of November 2017, in the early hours of the morning, 14-year-old Molly Russell took her own life in her bedroom in Harrow. The response from the emergency services features early in the film.
It takes me right back to the morning we found Molly's lifeless body. I sort of realised instantly that my life was broken into two halves. Something was fractured and could never be put back together.
I have no doubt that Instagram helped kill my daughter.
Inquest has opened into the death of a teenage girl who took her own life.
In the film, the courtroom inquest into Molly's death is reenacted.
This looks like control. It looks like trying to take control of the person who is suffering.
And lawyers revealed in the 6 months before her death Molly interacted with more than 2,000 posts on Meta's Instagram on topics like self-harm, depression and suicide.
It was that cumulative stream of harmful content that was largely there because Meta's algorithms were feeding more and more of it to Molly.
The film shows the powerful cross-examination of Meta's senior executive.
You're not their parent. You're just a business in America.
Who told the court the majority of the posts Molly saw were safe for children.
They were based on what she engaged with. So the more she engaged with something, the more she got that type of content. I didn't think that was a way a responsible company would behave.
The coroner concluded social media content contributed more than minimally to Molly's death.
I think it was important for an official somewhere on this planet to link a tragic death with online harms. I think that's the first time it's ever happened. And I'm very glad the coroner drew the conclusions that he did.
We're going to work with President Trump.
The film takes us from Molly's suburban bedroom to the boardrooms of Silicon Valley as Ian campaigns for internet safeguards and Meta boss Mark Zuckerberg rallies against them.
We're going to work with President Trump to push back on governments around the world that are going after American companies and pushing to censor more.
No, we're pushing to regulate companies to make them safe. Battle lines drawn now, very clearly.
Do you ever imagine a scenario where you might be face-to-face with Mark Zuckerberg and what you would want to tell him?
I'm pretty certain Mark Zuckerberg would do everything in his power never to come face-to-face with people like me. He doesn't want to face that human truth that his products are causing so much widespread harm.
But it's the testimonies of Molly's friends and their frustration over the lack of action by tech firms which leaves viewers with the sense of urgency shared by everyone who loved her.
How many Mollys does it have to take for them to actually realise that this is wrong? When will they make the change?
LBC's Helen Hoddenott reporting. A spokesman for Meta has said, "Our thoughts remain with Molly's friends and family. We know parents and teens want a safe experience online, which is why we've spent over a decade working to put protection on our platforms." We'll continue Online Safety Day. Also, coming up later in the show, the impact, the increase in the price of oil. All right, it's not obviously initially felt on the forecourts with the price of diesel and the price of petrol, but then everything that gets delivered, the prices will go up there. We'll look at what that might do to our already fragile economy. And then, after the news, who needs opera or ballet? No one, says acting star Timothy Chalamet. That's Dance of the Sugar Plum Fairy, by the way. I'll be asking you, how regularly are you in the stalls for a bit of opera or a bit of the ballet? It's 8:30. You're listening to Breakfast with me, Nick Ferrari, here on LBC News Time. Dominic Ellis.
A cabinet minister has told Nick the government is monitoring oil prices after they skyrocketed overnight due to the Iran conflict. Prices have soared to about $114 a barrel due to disruptions stemming from the conflict. Steve Reed has told LBC the government's keeping a close eye on the situation and the potential impact on the cost of living. Iran's new supreme leader has been named as Mojtaba Khamenei. He succeeds his father Ali Khamenei, who was killed in joint US-Israeli airstrikes at the start of the conflict last week. In other news, LBC can exclusively reveal only one tech company has paid a fine for breaking the Online Safety Act a year after coming into force. Ofcom has issued six firms penalties, totaling more than $3 million for things like not putting proper age checks on their sites. And trains aren't stopping at Scotland's busiest railway station, Glasgow Central, after a huge fire nearby. It broke out in a vape shop yesterday. No injuries have been reported. LBC weather, cloudy but dry for most. Some patchy rain in the west, a high of 15 degrees.
Hey, smart speaker. Play LBC.
Good morning, I'm Nick Ferrari. It's time to get to your calls.
First time caller. A little bit nervous.
Thanks for taking my call.
Thanks for taking my call.
I will say the UK has been very, very uncooperative. This is not Winston Churchill that we're dealing with.
Hear every side of the story.
I've booked five different flights from Dubai to London, and every single one of these flights has been cancelled.
What more evidence do we need to show that Iran was only interested in fomenting danger?
Iran is entitled to defend itself.
Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app. LBC, leading Britain's conversation.
Jay here knows that Zoopla can provide valuations for any home in the UK,
so we can see what that new couple across the road might have paid.
Ooh la la.
Have a nose at what the curtain twitchers next door could sell for. And even see what his own place is worth.
Cool, look at that.
Plus, Zoopla lets you find and compare local estate agents if you do decide to sell up. Think of all those new neighbours you'll be able to snoop on, Jay. If you want to know, just ask Zoopla.
BetMGM was born in Vegas. So just like the Cheltenham Festival, we know a thing or two about entertainment. Every ride, every race, every roar. This is Cheltenham Vegas style. Sign up to BetMGM now. Bet £10 and get £40 in free bets. That's right. Bet £10 and get £40 in free bets. Are you ready for the greatest show on turf? BetMGM. It's showtime.
Minimum stake £10 and customers only. Wagering requirements and conditions apply. 18 plus. Please gamble responsibly.
So, what's on your to-do list today? Why don't you check if you're eligible for pension credit? It tops up your pension income and also opens up help with heating bills, council tax, and more. Search pension credit on gov.uk or call 0800 99 1234. There's nothing to lose. Check today. Pension credit. Credit where credit's due. Eligibility criteria apply.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
8:33, the moment the monarch met the president, scheduled next month. Should it be delayed? Peter's in Stirling. Good to have you on, Peter. Your reaction. Morning, sir.
Good morning, Nick. Yes. I think it should be cancelled, to be honest.
Cancelled, full stop.
Full stop. It's a strong, it's a powerful message. I don't think this president is going to respond to anything other than force. If we give him an inch, he'll take a mile, and he has done. We have a history in this country of standing up to bullies and to intimidation,
and I don't think
it should stop now just because it's inconvenient.
Can I ask you a question which I asked Ed Davey, and with respect, I don't think he answered it, but I'll try with you. What would it achieve? Because all that's going to happen, and you might say, well, that's a good thing, is we're going to put him even more offside.
I think it would do that. I think, and we have to almost deliberately do that in some ways without being too over the top.
But if you've got a close mate, I don't know if I'll use the analogy of a marriage, but if you've got a close mate and he or she isn't really behaving the way that you've chosen, don't you try and talk to them first?
You do, but we've been trying that.
How?
We tried to over Greenland. We've tried to over. He broke the law in Venezuela. If your mate, here's the analogy, Nick.
Go on.
You find your mate is repeatedly hitting his wife and ignores all calls to stop, do you stay friends with him?
I certainly don't ignore him. I try and get action. I would probably, God forbid,
I'd go straight to the police, Nick.
Well, yeah. I mean, I would try and bring about what they call an intervention. What I wouldn't do is cut off all links, because that is the last thing you do.
But how long do you try? How long do you keep trying before
well,
you
it's
say
an odd
no?
One, because obviously, as you rightly say, you'd get the local authority or you'd get the police involved.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm just saying. Okay, lastly, just bear with me.
Okay.
President Trump is the most extraordinarily complex person to deal with. I think pretty much one of the few institutions on the planet for which he has any respect is the monarchy. Because of the love that his late mum, who was Scottish, had for our Queen and indeed his love for this country. If you'll hold with me so far, then perhaps the only person that Trump might at least listen to, not going to say he'll act accordingly, might be our King. He's done it in the past. One reads he's done it in the past. Perhaps just a few words of advice, or do you think about this? Is that such a crazy idea? If you think it's crazy, tell me.
It's not a crazy idea, and the thought did cross my mind. But then I thought, he did have a state visit, wasn't it, last year?
Yep.
And what about it? Yep. Since then, we've had Greenland, we've had Maduro, we've had this.
Fair point.
Trump's gone off the rails. So, he's still beating his wife, basically, if we follow the analogy.
I hear what you're saying. Yeah, fair point what you say. Pete, always enjoy speaking with you. Be well. Thank you. Liz says, big mistake for King Charles not to go next month. He's supposed to be above politics. That's a good point, Liz. Should remember that. He's going to show the US people he's happy about their independence and that we all want to be friends. This comes in... this is fair enough. Marita, the risk is there's zero control over what Trump might do. What happens if he did something to totally embarrass the king? What are the extraction plans? Well, it wouldn't be the first time, of course, that they've tried to upstage or embarrass a monarch, but they're pretty skilled at getting through it. Let's go to other matters and change the pace at 8:37. Do you care for art such as... bits of music from Madama Butterfly. Do you care for music like that or even opera? Well, there's someone who doesn't.
And I don't want to be working in ballet or opera or, you know, things where it's like, hey, keep this thing alive, even though no one cares about this anymore. All respect to the ballet and opera people out there. I just lost 14 cents in viewership. But, damn, I just took shots for no reason.
That's not a shot. I hear what you're saying.
Yeah.
So that's actor and Oscar nominee Timothée Chalamet for his leading role in the film Marty Supreme, speaking with fellow actor Matthew McConaughey for an interview with Variety. So should we care about opera and ballet? Well, someone does. Richard Morrison is an opera singer, founder and artistic director of the Allen International Festival, and is a good friend of a very close friend of mine, and has even sung in my back garden. Good to see you again, Richard. I trust. Good to see you again. Right, to those who are on the fence, to those who say, well, I don't go to opera, I don't go to ballet, maybe the actor's right. Richard Morrison, what would you say?
Well, I'd say that opera and ballet are classical art forms that have a great tradition, and they're rooted in the expression of the human condition. Yeah. So one of the challenges for these traditional art forms or classical art forms nowadays is competing for space in a world where there's so many more forms of expression. But these are things that are sometimes... There's a lot of people don't really understand often opera and ballet, for example. But there are some remarkable... They're evolving to cater for the times, Nick. You know, there's a great deal of creativity and imagination that takes place in dance choreography and opera production nowadays. And I think the key thing is, in a world where, in one way, we've never been more connected, human connection is missing. And the fact is that in theatres and in these spaces, that's live performance. It's humans sharing a space, a shared creative experience. That is extremely relevant nowadays.
Is it, in a way, to try and get more people to appreciate the art? And I think you reference this in a way, Richard. Some of it, is it fair to say, is a little impenetrable?
Yes. I mean, so the challenges in a modern world are balancing tradition and innovation, creating compelling new work. There's a great deal of stall placed on authenticity nowadays, and it's having an authentic emotional communication, but it's a different scale. So it's scale versus intimacy as well, and storytelling for contemporary audiences. So these are the challenges that's true that there are definitely challenges faced by these art forms, and they need to decide how they're going to present themselves and how they're going to encourage people to come in. But it's a stylized language in opera, there's stylized movement in classical ballet, as opposed to, of course, in dance, there's contemporary dance, and there's all kinds of different modes of expression. So these are the challenges that are faced by these art forms, that's for sure.
But we could also speak of their longevity. I think opera's been around since the 1500s, hasn't it?
Of course, Abbess Hildegard von Bingen, I think, which she
that's she's, easy for you to say.
Yes, an old friend of mine, a very old friend of mine. But they're rooted in tradition and in the human condition and the longevity and the passage of time through cultures and cultural expression, and they carry a great sense of meaning. The thing is, there's a sort of stylistic and heightened type of singing in opera and a type of movement, as I've explained, in dance. And these are challenges. But if only it doesn't help when a chap like that says that, because it doesn't help people get in
reinforces the negative stereotypes that...
Yes.
And listen, when I was at school, I'll be honest with you, Richard, and I don't go regularly, but I do go quite a lot to opera and occasionally about the richness that I get. I'm so grateful that my mind was open to it, because it is the most extraordinary theatrical experience. Lastly, what's the entry point opera for a listener now who's thinking, you know what, I didn't know it's been around all these hundreds of years. I might actually try an opera. What's a nice entry point, would you say, Rich?
Carmen.
Perfect. Why Carmen?
Well, it's so that is
love,
very
lust, sex. Apart from
love,
that,
love, lust, sex, wonderful tunes, fabulous, and of course, don't forget the live orchestra. Oh, you've got live orchestra, live musicians. You know, it's a tremendous bringing together of theatre, music, and creativity.
Before I let you go, what is the Arran International Festival in a couple of snappy sentences, Richard?
It's a music and arts festival founded on the island of Arran, a beautiful island, an island of outstanding natural beauty in the west coast of Scotland, rooted in community and outward-facing in spirit.
What time of year? When is it?
August, third week of August every year. Please come along.
Only if you'll sing to me. Richard, as ever, thanks for your time. Richard Morrison, opera singer, founder and artistic director of the Arran International Festival, held on the Isle of Arran, third week of August. Richard, thanks for that. 8:43. Let's get your calls on about that. Andrew's in Paddington. Andrew, your reaction to what the actor has said. Good morning.
Sure. Good morning, Nick. And we've spoken before.
Yes.
You know, I think that you're probably the best radio journalist in the UK.
Maybe yeah, you're not listening to enough radio. But anyway, thank you for your kind words, Andrew.
So the first opera, Monteverdi, 1567 to 1643.
Right.
For those who want an entry point, any Mozart opera will do. Right. Who actually cares what Timothy Chalamet thinks?
Young people.
He couldn't work in either opera or ballet because he doesn't have the ability.
Mm.
So I was going to say, for whom is he a spokesman? You say for young people.
Well, I think a lot of people will identify with it. I'm not saying they're right, Andrew, but they will.
All right. I was in Paris last week, both for the opera and the ballet. Both were packed with a lot of young people. I think what he's saying is like saying that the classics, Wuthering Heights, Hamlet, are irrelevant.
Oh, well said.
But in both cases, a whole new audience is actually watching both in the cinema. And I think that opera and ballet will remain relevant long after Timothy Chalamet is completely forgotten.
What a brilliant line. Well, it's been around since the 1500s, so I think you're right. Andrew, great hearing from you. Thanks for your kind words about the show. I think we will probably remember Carmen and Mozart long after Timothy Chalamet. Thanks, Andrew. Lindsay's in Richmond upon Thames. Lindsay, your reaction to this. Good morning.
Hello. Good morning.
Hello.
Good morning, Nathan Coe. Yes, I think it's his loss. I think he's young and foolish. He might learn in time. But, I mean, who doesn't love Ness and Dormer?
Yes. Fantastic.
I mean, you know, that's a universal one, and we can all share that. I think it's a shame that any sort of propaganda-type stuff, that it's too hard and we can't relate to it.
Were you into it when you were a young woman? How did you get exposed to either opera or ballet?
Yes, my grandmother used to sing it as she did the washing up.
Oh, how wonderful.
She loved Puccini, and she used to be there with her suds going, singing. She had a lovely voice. Both my grandmothers did. And, I mean, one of my grandmothers was a real Yorkshire woman, working class.
Mm.
She was into singing. She had a fabulous voice. You know, fantastic. I think it's something we can all share.
Absolutely agree with you and your lovely grandmother's singing voices. What a marvellous memories. Lindsay, thank you. Robert says, I remember going to my first ballet in the 1980s, Chicago Ballet Company, performing at the Theatre Royal Glasgow. Hopefully that building's in a better state than the Central Railway Station at the moment. Adam says, my daughters just did a full dance weekend at a local theatre. It had various disciplines, including ballet, and they loved it. And the whole audience had a fantastic time. And these are just normal working families. The idea no one cares about ballet and it's only for the upper classes is nonsense. It's all adaptable to modern music and lots of scope for creativity and enjoyment. Keep them coming. We'll take more of your calls on that. Coming up after the news, the second part of my interview, Online Safety Day here on LBC with the boss, the chief executive of Ofcom. Now, you've already heard that we've only actually recouped £55,000 worth of £3 million levied, but apparently that puts us ahead of everybody else on the planet.
If I go abroad, people are going, how on earth have you moved so fast?
Really?
Because which most
countries?
Regulators... Oh, Australia, South Africa, the European Union, the European Commission.
You'll hear more on that after this. 8:46, LBC News headlines, Dominic Ellis.
A cabinet minister has told Nick the UK is keeping a close eye on oil prices and the potential impact on the cost of living after they skyrocketed overnight due to the Iran conflict. LBC can exclusively reveal only one tech company has paid a fine for breaking the Online Safety Act a year after coming into force. And train passengers in Scotland are facing disruption after a major fire caused a building to partially collapse close to Glasgow Central Station. LBC weather, cloudy but dry for most. Patchy rain in the west, a high of 15 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. On the trains, Chiltern Railway services remain suspended between Marylebone and High Wycombe, and Southern aren't running between Sutton and West Croydon. Southern and Thames Link also delayed between Sutton and Tulse Hill, but that's after a signal failure. On the Underground, there are severe delays on the Metropolitan, Circle and Hammersmith and City lines, and minor delays on the Piccadilly and Bakerloo lines. On the roads, it's very busy on the M25 anti-clockwise to junction 29 at the A127. It's following an accident, but all the lanes are open. No Woolwich Ferry running because of the fog, and because of the fog, there's delays and cancellations at London City, Gatwick, and also at Stansted Airport.
This is LBC.
Right, who's all in for Cancer Research UK's Race for Life? Sunday Leaguers, dog lovers, bait clubbers, banker dancers, baby ravers, potters. Whether you walk it, jog it, or run it, go all in against cancer. All in to help fund life-saving research. Sign up to your local 3K, 5K, 10K or Pretty Muddy event from just $14.99. Search Race for Life. Prices vary by event distance and participant age.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060 973. This is LBC.
I'm Natasha, and this is my NHS story. I went to the GP because I'd found a lump in my breast, and the GP referred me to a CDC centre. It was just really welcoming from the moment I arrived. To just be reassured all in one day was fantastic.
The government is opening new community diagnostic centres, with many already available 12 hours a day, 7 days a week, so the NHS can be there for all of us when we need it. Find your closest one at gov.uk/NHS Fit for the Future. Available England-wide.
Searching for a holiday? Here's an idea. Don't type cheap flights to wherever into your browser. You know you do it. Search Kayak instead. Let us do the finding for you. All the great flight deals from hundreds of travel sites, all in one place. Go on, do it, do it. Listen to the waves. They're calling your name. Not literally, obviously, unless your name is Kayak. Kayak! You're thinking about it, aren't you? Search Kayak and go see for yourself.
Our pet's in a pickle. We're here when it matters most. For fuss-free pet insurance policies as unique as they are. Visit petsinapickle.co.uk.
With over 50 years' experience, Fidelity can help you feel confidently invested. Make the most of your annual allowances by the 5th of April with our expert insights, excellent service, and wealth of investment options. For ISAs, pensions, or advice, go to fidelity.co.uk. Your capital is at risk. Terms apply.
At Amazon, over 50% of deliveries now come with less packaging or with no added packaging at all. It's a difference you'll notice on your doorstep, where you chat with friends, where your neighbour's daughter practices guitar, and where we deliver your new noise-cancelling headphones in the manufacturer's packaging. Ah, much better. Reduced packaging from Amazon. We're delivering change where it matters, on your doorstep. Based on 2025 Amazon packaging data across the UK and EU.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
It's 10 minutes before 9. Now, to mark Online Safety Day, it was a year ago that Ofcom, the relevant government body, or relevant organisation, I should say, was given the powers necessary to investigate. But back in November, the Science and Technology Secretary, Liz Kendall, sent a letter to the boss, Dame Melanie, detailing her, quotes, deep disappointment in the implementation of the Act. So how did Ofcom respond?
But you received, or it is reported, you received a letter in November from the Technology Secretary, Liz Kendall, detailing her, and I quote, deep disappointment in the delays to the implementation. How do you respond to that criticism?
Well, she was particularly commenting on a piece of policy work, which is about extra duties on some of the largest services, which we have delayed because the government had a major legal challenge on that, which raised lots of additional questions that we've had to look at. But when it comes to our enforcement, that's holding the industry to account, I think we are making, you know, very rapid progress, but absolutely the scale of the challenge that we're facing into here is enormous, Nick, and I'm under no illusions about that. When I go and talk to the people in these tech companies, I'm still not hearing them talk about harm. I'm still not hearing them talk about the, you know, bad actors that they're letting onto their platforms in contact with children. And it's that cultural change that we need to be driving. And it's you know, it's a long road ahead.
It is a long, and you're still happy with nine completed investigations in this? You don't think it should be driving forward?
Nine fines and other completed investigations in this period.
You're happy with that?
I think, look, I'm never going to be happy about the scale of harm that is still there online and the job that lies ahead of us. This is one of the most challenging jobs, I think, that you can imagine in regulation. And the Online Safety Act is more ambitious than any other global set of rules. So it's a really, really big task. I'm proud of what my teams have achieved in the first year, but we're absolutely clear that we need to keep on moving. And particularly on the protection of children, you will hear more from us in the next few days. We want to be clearer with the public what we're doing and try and bring that out into the light a little bit more.
Can we look to Australia, where, of course, I'm sure you're familiar with the legislation there. Now, why here in the UK do parents have to report to the platform first before to you and your colleagues at Ofcom? In Australia, I understand they can go straight to what's called the eSafety Commissioner. Why is the procedure, it would seem, lengthier here?
Well, look, that was a choice that Parliament made.
Agree with it?
Well, you know, it's for Parliament to decide. It's for our politicians to set the rules, and it's my job to implement them. And so I think the reason why they didn't introduce a system whereby you can go to a regulator, as you can in Australia, is partly because of the scale, but also a sense of the accountability needing to be on the platforms for having systems and processes, proper complaints procedures and so on. And actually, when I talk particularly to children, when I talk to teenagers online, they really want to be able to complain to the platform. I don't think they want to go to a regulator. They say, I want to be able to complain. I want to be able to name that. Well, that's what they feel they are at the moment. And we've got to do a lot more to get those complaint systems mobilized and more meaningful. That's another, you know, big, challenging job for us.
If you look at the way other aspects of Ofcom work, if you look in the broadcast field, there are regular updates. I think a fortnightly update, or is there a publication that, yes, we've looked at this TV show. Why not a similar idea here?
It's a really good point, Nick. I think we are thinking quite hard, and maybe that's one option is
because they don't imply guilt. They simply say we looked at match of the day or the international rugby coverage or whatever it might be, and we move on. Why not look at something like that here?
Well, I think it's a good point. Of course, we're not looking at individual bits of content because that's not, as we were just saying, we don't have that role of being able to take direct complaints about something people have seen that they're concerned about. And, you know, maybe Parliament will want to move to put in place something like that for an ombudsman or some kind of setup where individuals can go and get redress when they don't get it from the platform. But
Isn't that your job, though?
Well, it isn't at the moment.
If I don't get redress from the platform, don't I then come?
No, that just isn't how it's been set up. Our job, and it's a pretty big one, is to make sure that the companies have got the right processes and systems in place to make people safer, whether that's age checks at aged 18, whether it's making sure that adults can't contact children they don't know to reduce the risks of grooming, which is a massive problem, whether it's about making sure that they're doing content moderation so that they weed out, harmful content and take it down. It's that sort of thing that we are trying to change in these services, real tangible things that will make a difference to people's experiences.
You talk about grooming. You'll recall when we spoke the last time, one of my colleagues set up the profile of a supposed 13-year-old girl, this time on TikTok, to test whether the platform was preventing younger users from accessing harmful content. With one search of the term skinny, we were deluged with posts glorifying eating disorders, one with the song lyrics, and I quote, "If they say to kill yourself, then you will try it." The world's not getting safer for children if we get that with a few clicks, is it?
No, I mean, that's just...
So that's a fail,
no,
isn't it?
Well, that's definitely a fail by that platform, yes. And I don't know, that when we last spoke, that was a little while ago.
Yes, it was.
These companies are absolutely under an obligation to make sure that if they have under 18s on their platform, that pro-suicide material like that is not shown at all to those young people. So that's the test. And our question at Ofcom that we are, you know, rigorously going through with them at the moment is, are they meeting it? As I say, they're all wanting to comply. That's what they would tell you.
How did my colleague?
It's about whether they're really doing it.
Then I know you don't know the individual circumstances, and I'm sure you'll take it away and you'll look at it. But how did my colleague pose with such ease as a 13-year-old girl and get that from TikTok then? How?
Well, one of the things we need to see is much, much better age checks, and we need companies like TikTok and Snap and the others to understand how old their users are, particularly at that critical moment of 18 where the law is really clear. You need a different experience if you're under 18. But also to make sure that they haven't got younger children on their platforms, because at the moment they all have minimum ages of age 13, but very few of them enforce that properly.
Last minute also together, you have the power to block non-compliant sites from the UK. How many websites have you blocked in that fashion?
Well, look, we don't actually have the power to block websites. No, what we can do is apply to a court for them to be blocked, for their business to be disrupted, either by preventing the telecoms companies from carrying their traffic or whatever.
Have you sought to do that yet?
We have the suicide forum under active consideration in that respect. But I should be really clear, it's a very, very strong test to actually ban a service. So, you know, it'll be for the court to assess. And Ofcom's job is to make sure that we build our case when we bring one, should we bring one, as well as we possibly can.
Dame Melanie, what does success look like over the next 5-6 months?
Success over the next 5 to 6 months looks like significant more progress from the big companies who have children on their platforms every day. We're talking Snapchat, TikTok, Instagram, Facebook, Roblox,
YouTube. Does it also not look like collecting the fines? 3 million levied, 55,000 received. That's not a great strike rate.
Well, look, I'm actually saying to you, Nick, that I don't think that the collection of fines is an indication of whether or not the regime is working. The fact that Ofcom has levied so many fines in only 1 year. Again, if I go abroad, people are going, how on earth have you moved so fast?
Really?
Because Australia, right. South Africa, the European Union, the European Commission. Okay. The European Commission have hardly done any fines, and they've been running for a year or so longer than us.
Okay.
So people are actually looking at the UK and going, not a bad start. But when it comes to the progress we need to make, of course, it's a massive mountain we've still got
to climb. I will return to that point. Not a bad start, but meaningless if I don't write the cheque for the fine that's been levied.
I just disagree with that. I mean, look, in the end, of course we want the fines to be paid, but the most important thing is that we actually see a safer life, particularly for children. And so companies that don't want to comply with us, if they decide that they're going to withdraw their service from the UK, then for us, that is a significant improvement in protections for the public. If they decide they want to comply with our rules, even better. A fine is great, but it's not the metric that really shows whether you're actually achieving success for the public.
And the final metric, which surely you would agree, is a completed investigation, whether there is a problem, whether there needs to be a fine. Mm. Do you think you're moving rapidly enough? Again, I refer you to those numbers.
Yeah, we've concluded, you know, at least nine fines. Then there are a number of others where we've concluded our investigations.
Full number of investigations
We'll have to get that to you. I haven't got the precise number in front of me, but and it's moving.
29 companies have been investigated, 22 of which are still open. Is that relevant?
I think it's nearly 100 services that have been under investigation.
Companies.
Exactly. And the number of companies beneath
that. Is that a great strike rate?
It's more than 22, I can tell you that.
Okay.
I think we just need to maybe do a better job of explaining to you what we're doing here. What we're focused on is getting results for the public.
Okay.
So what have we seen over the last year? We've seen, you know, an increase in the number of companies, that have got protections in to find child sexual abuse material because of our action, which we did with the National Crime Agency. We've seen the porn industry introduce age checks in the UK that hasn't happened in any other country to protect children from stumbling across porn. We've seen a number of really risky smaller sites withdraw their service from the UK because they know we're serious and they would rather do that then face the consequences of dealing with Ofcom. And, you know, I don't want that to happen to every service, obviously, but for those that just don't want to comply, it's a much better outcome from the UK than we ever had before. So those are the results that we're interested in. If fines help us along the way towards that, fantastic, but it's the outcomes I'm after. And so far, we have had good progress with massive more to do.
Dame Melanie Dawes, and to clarify exactly where we are, Ofcom has subsequently been in touch under the Online Safety Act since the duties came into force in March 2025. The total cases opened and closed is 30, encompassing 96 sites. Currently open, well, it's 23. Dame Melanie said it was more than 22, it's 23, covering 79 sites. As we've told you already, more than £3 million in fines have been issued. That equals 11 fines in total against 6 companies, including one last month, which is the biggest to date. More online safety in the next hour. It's 1 minute after 9, LBC News headlines.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom, the Chancellor is to take part in an emergency meeting to discuss skyrocketing oil prices due to the conflict in Iran. Rachel Reeves will speak virtually with G7 finance ministers later. Oil prices surged overnight to more than $114 a barrel, about 60% higher than when the war started. Tehran has all but stopped tankers from using the critical Strait of Hormuz shipping lane. Speaking to Nick this morning, the Cabinet Minister Steve Reed was asked whether the UK should rethink transitioning away from North Sea oil exploration.
Well, we do need to keep a very close eye on what's happening and any potential impact on the cost of living here at home. Now, on your point about the North Sea, any oil that's coming out of the North Sea, and of course all the existing contracts for drilling are still continuing there, it doesn't reduce prices because oil prices are set globally. So what's happening in the Middle East would affect prices for North Sea oil, so there's no benefit from that.
Iranian clerics have named Mujtaba Khamenei as the country's new supreme leader. He succeeds his father, who was killed in joint US-Israeli airstrikes 9 days ago. In other news this morning, LBC can exclusively reveal only one tech company has paid a fine for breaking the Online Safety Act a year after coming into force. Since our first Online Safety Day, Ofcom has issued six firm penalties, totalling more than £3 million for things like not putting proper age checks on their sites. But only 55,000 of that's been paid, less than 2%. Speaking to Nick, Ofcom's chief executive, Melanie Dawes, defended the figures.
I don't think that the collection of fines is an indication of whether or not the regime is working. The fact that Ofcom has levied so many fines in only 1 year, again, if I go abroad, people are going, how on earth have you moved so fast?
There's more on this story on the LBC app, and Nick will be speaking with Ellen Room, one of the UK's leading online safety campaigners, in the next hour. And train passengers are facing disruption after a major fire caused a building to partially collapse close to Glasgow Central Station. ScotRail says no trains will operate in or out of Scotland's busiest railway station today. In the city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading down 193 at 10,093. The pound buys $1.33 and €1.15. LBC weather, cloudy but dry for most, some patchy rain developing in the west, a high of 15 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
I'm back in Charlie Bigham's kitchen. What's on the menu?
My ultimate lasagna, made with a wonderfully rich ragu, slow-cooked for at least 2 hours, layered five times with fresh pasta and finished with creamy bechamel and mature cheddar.
Ooh, I like what I'm hearing.
And I haven't even got to the sneaky layer of bechamel in the middle yet. Cheers.
The only thing I like more than a delicious lasagna is one that I didn't have to make. You're not free tomorrow, are you?
I think I've got plans.
Charlie Bigham's.
Handmade in my kitchen. Cooked in yours.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Want you 5 minutes after nine on Monday, the 9th of March. Coming up in this hour, as the oil price, we've already told you in the first hour of the show, continues to soar, is it time to drill, baby, drill in the North Sea? One energy expert says yes. The Octopus founder and government advisor, Greg Jackson, will tell you more of what he's saying on that in that area. Plus, back to the interview we had in the first hour, plan to boost social cohesion, targeting extremism. But what is cohesion like in your community at the moment? Looking at events in Scotland in that football game, in London with the pro and anti-Iranian regime demonstrations, in places such as Crowborough and elsewhere, and even that hotel, asylum-seeking hotel out in Epping in Essex. Exactly what it's like where you are? And then later in this hour...
Posing as a 13-year-old, we've repeated our experiments to explore the sort of content a young person could be exposed to on the social media site TikTok. I'm LBC's Henry Riley with the details.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
While I've no idea what's happening in your particular area, I can tell you that where I live, in the course of the weekend, the price of a litre of unleaded fuel went from 131.9, which is what I paid on Friday afternoon. Yesterday afternoon, that same forecourt had it at 138.9. So that's a 7p a litre. I don't even know what that would mean in gallons. It's about 4 litres to gallon. Anyway, it doesn't matter. We work in litres now, Nick. Don't worry about it. So that's that. And that is the same forecourt, up 7 pence a litre.
I fear, and I really hope I'm wrong, I fear the prices are going to go only one way. Remember, up like a rocket and down like a feather? So what is the reality? Is it now that we should be looking to the North Sea? How much is there actually to be had in the North Sea? Well, Greg Jackson, who is the founder of Octopus and is a government advisor, urging the government to use what's available in the North Sea, and he's putting it politely, rethink those key net zero policies. He says the country is staring down the barrel, his words, not mine, of an energy price shock. He's also a member of the Industrial Strategy Advisory Council, and he shared close ties with key government figures, including Business Secretary Peter Kyle, and warning of economic damage across the whole landscape is imminent. Well, it is, because wherever you are now, if you're sitting at your kitchen table eating your cornflakes or adding milk to your tea or coffee, well, most of the above, all delivered by trucks, I would say virtually all, if not all, which, of course, all require fuel. So what of a government change of tack? Housing Secretary Steve Reid joined me in the first hour. He was talking about other matters, but I asked him, remember he once said, build, baby, build, because he was building, so Housing Secretary. Is it time to drill, baby, drill?
Well, we do need to keep a very close eye on what's happening and any potential impact on the cost of living here at home. Now, on your point about the North Sea, any oil that's coming out of the North Sea, and of course all the existing contracts for drilling are still continuing there, it doesn't reduce prices because oil prices are set globally. So what's happening in the Middle East would affect prices for North Sea oil, so there's no benefit from that. What would really benefit the country in the long term is switching away from dependence on fossil fuel and moving to clean energy, wind, wave, solar, nuclear, so that we're in charge of our own energy and not dependent on what happens in other regions of the planet. And that, of course, is what the government's doing.
Let's turn to Nick Butler, who's a professor, energy economist, visiting professor at King's College London, joining me now. It's a bit like asking whether you like Marmite or not. Is there still a lot of oil to be had in the North Sea? Good morning, Professor.
Well, good morning, Nick. Yes, there is a certain amount. It's not an enormous amount. There are about 3 billion barrels of oil and gas that have been discovered, proven, and ready to be developed. And there's, according to the North Sea Transition Authority, another 10 billion, which is believed to be there, which would be found if we did some exploration. And we didn't do any exploration at all last year. So I think the key phrase from what Steve Reid was saying was in the longer term. We're talking about short term. We're talking about the petrol price that you were facing over the weekend. You're exactly right. That is going to go up. Developing more in the North Sea will take time. So this is not an instant solution. But when it looks as if this war in the Middle East is going to go on, I think it would be foolish not to develop and encourage the development of whatever resources we have. Otherwise, we'll just import.
Professor, you will hear the headlines and study the news with a far greater degree of knowledge than I. What will you be looking for over the coming days? What would give you great cause for concern for the impact at the pumps and then obviously at the stores and everywhere else?
Well, what's happening now, what's happened overnight, really, is more attacks on oil facilities around the Gulf, not just in Iran. And it now looks as if, with the Iranians becoming more defiant than ever, appointing a new supreme leader, that the war is going to go on quite a long time. The tankers have stopped moving through Hormuz, not least because the insurance is not available for them to make that journey. And therefore, stocks are building up in the countries where that oil is produced, to the point where Kuwait and others are now stopping production. So this is going to go on for some time, and it will feed through over the next few weeks to your pump price and everybody else's price, because we still depend on oil and gas for 80% of all the energy we use in this country every day.
Well, you reference gas. Of course, we're talking a lot about petrol or diesel. Of course, it's going to hit our heating bills as well, I imagine, isn't it, Professor?
Absolutely. Gas has gone up quite a lot already, and I think it will go up more because the Qataris, which is where we get some of our gas, I've also talked about having to close down production because they can't get it out through Hormuz. So it all feeds through. It's a global market. We are an importer already. We import half of all our oil and gas, more than that. And that is going up all the time because the North Sea is in natural decline. But we shouldn't do anything to accelerate that decline.
Lastly, as regards the North Sea, is it possible to be an eco-friendly pragmatist and look at further exploration? Can the two be balanced, or is the other one, unfortunately, they're just unalienable?
No, I think it is actually environmentally sensible to use the gas from the North Sea, because if we don't use that, we import it from Qatar, where the process of liquefaction and moving it across thousands of miles is seven times more carbon intensive than producing gas from fields in the North Sea and bringing it onshore by a pipeline.
Next time I speak to Ed Miliband, I'll try and keep that note in the back of my mind, Professor, as I will challenge him with that. I'm grateful. Thank you for your time. Nick Butler is energy economist and visiting professor at King's College London. Listening to that, Gawain Toler, who's a member of Reform UK's decision-making board. And what do we hear from Reform UK? Remind the listeners, if you would, of the policy. Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning, Nick. We've been calling for drill, baby, drill, as you would put it, for years now, because we do not believe that relying on abroad for everything is necessarily the way, right way forward. I know, yes, the North Sea has been the part of the problem. You had was the Jackdaw field, was one of the places that the government stopped the announcement to go work on Rosebank again. These are North Sea fields. That was stopped. We've stopped exploring, we've stopped investigating. But worse, there's something the government can do almost instantly, and that is to reduce what they call the EPL.
Right. Help me with that. What is that, Mr.
The Taylor? Energy Profits Levy.
Right.
Currently, the headline tax for those producing oil and gas in the UK is 78%.
Right.
So it makes it almost uneconomic. If they talk about the international prices, don't they? Oh, nothing we can do. It's all on the international level. Well, if we didn't tax our own producers at 78%.
I see.
You see the point?
Yep.
And so, therefore, the government has made it uneconomic. Through the net zero pushing, you've got organisations and companies such as the big banks, such as NatWest or HSBC, have stopped, basically said, we will not give money or loan money to companies that are involved in oil and gas extraction. Means that it's very hard to get the investment in order to go and look for new fields. And the entire government approach, and not just this one, we can't just blame Ed Miliband, much as I'd love to, but you've got to blame the Conservative government prior to that, that basically set all this stuff up. This didn't happen overnight. The Labour Party did not suddenly come into power and then close down hydrocarbons.
And yet, lastly, Mr. Taylor, is there an argument, and not that I hold with everything that Ed Miliband does, but if we were all having our heat generated by heat pumps, if we were all getting in electric vehicles and vans, then we wouldn't feel the pressure in the
sky. Where would we get the electricity from? From wind turbines.
You've got to
be kidding me. This is if you're going to have significant and the covering the countryside in solar panels in a country that doesn't have sun, this is lunacy. It does not work. It is ideology over reality, and the reality is, as you were pointing out, the petrol's going through the roof, our electricity bills are going through the roof. Well, we know our electricity is already the most expensive in the world.
We'll leave it there. Thank you, Gawain Toler. You sit on Reform UK's decision-making board. What decision would you make? Thank you, Mr. Toler. What decision would you make as regards drill, baby, drill? Fascinating from the professor. It's seven times more ecologically. There's more seven times ecological impact by driving across from Qatar. Also coming up, as the mother of murdered teenager Brianna Jai has urged MPs to back a Commons vote to protect children from social media harms without delay. It's Online Safety Day here.
My 14-year-old son, Jules, died at home in 2022, and I believe social media was to blame. I'm Ellen Room, and I'll be speaking to Nick later in the show.
Indeed, after the news. It's 9:15. LBC News headlines now. Dominic Ellis.
A cabinet minister has told Nick the UK is keeping a close eye on oil prices and the potential impact on the cost of living after they skyrocketed overnight due to the Iran conflict. LBC can exclusively reveal only one tech company has paid a fine for breaking the Online Safety Act a year after coming into force. And train passengers in Scotland are facing disruption after a major fire caused a building to partially collapse close to Glasgow Central Station. LBC weather, cloudy but dry for most. Patchy rain in the west, a high of 15 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne. We're very slow on the M1 southbound between junctions 9 at Dunstable Road at Redbourne and junction 8 at Hemel Hempstead. It's following an accident and there are queues on the approach. Still very slow on the M25 anti-clockwise between junctions 30 at the A13 to 29 at the A127. And that was after an accident that happened earlier. All the lanes are back open now on the A13 westbound at the Pitsey Flyover following that accident, but it's still very slow. Now, because of the fog, there's so many problems, mainly to the flight. So London City Airport, Gatwick and Stansted all reporting some disruption. And then on the trains, Chiltern Railway services are suspended between Marylebone and High Wycombe.
LBC.
Right then, who's all in for Cancer Research UK's Race for Life?
Anglers, ramblers, climbers, five-a-siders,
surfers, gamers, bikers,
hang gliders!
Book clubbers, are we up for it? Let's go all in against cancer. All in to help fund life-saving research. Sign up to your local 3K, 5K, 10K or Pretty Muddy event from just $14.99. Search Race for Life. Prices vary by event distance and participant age.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060973. LBC.
My name's Mark and this is my NHS story. The sensation in my neck was painful all the time. Once I spoke to my GP, they referred me to my CDC. They got me in very, very quickly. The amount of pain I went through for something so easy, why hadn't I done this 4 months before?
The government is opening new community diagnostic centres, with many already available 12 hours a day, 7 days a week, so the NHS can be there for all of us when we need it. Find your closest one at gov.uk/NHS Fit for the Future. Available England-wide.
For GCSE and A-level success, one name stands out. Justin Craig. Small, tailored group tuition that really works. Justin Craig courses consolidate knowledge, boost confidence and improve technique for mocks, assessments and exams. Available in classrooms and online. One-to-one also available. With over 40 years' experience, Justin Craig has helped more than 100,000 students. For more details, visit justincraig.ac.uk. Justin Craig. Tailored for you.
When you're smiling, when you're smiling, the whole world smiles with you.
Life feels better with a smile. Banning Dental Group Clinics. Modern, comfortable and affordable dentistry for all. See online for our price match promise. Keep on smiling.
Keep on smiling, keep on smiling, and the whole
Banningdental.co.uk.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
Come with your calls on North Sea Oil. Get ready for those prices at the pumps to soar. Shannon, you'll be the first caller. Where's your name? Vanessa. We're in a rural location, unfortunately, on heating oil. Ah, when I lived in a place in Kent, we were on heating oil. I know my parents used to live in fear of having to write that cheque. Younger listeners, ask your grandparents. Lose heating oil. Our prices have gone from 65p a litre less than 2 weeks ago. We had to pay £1.20 a litre on Friday. To put it into context, we needed 1,500 litres, which would have cost us £975, but we just had to pay £1,800. We had no choice, as our oil was low and our usual supplier had no supply. People are talking about potential increases on the cost of living. It's happening now. Stephen says, when I ask to drill or not to drill, both sides of the argument are correct. We need to both drill and to fully develop every and potential new renewable energy source in the UK. We need to be fully independent in energy. The fear we need to avoid is being beholden to international markets or pressures, whether Russia, Middle East or the US. It means every property has solar or thermal heating, offshore and onshore wind turbines, tidal, etc. Shannon's in Norwich. What do you see as the future in this, Shannon? Good morning.
Good morning. You know, I think the thing, I live in Norwich, so yes. Like the North Sea is my neighbor. I am, of course, worried about any drilling that's happening in the North Sea just because of the environmental impact to the surrounding world around us. But I do think that we're overly reliant on foreign oil at the moment. And, you know, I used to live in a house that also had, just like one of the texts that you just read, heating oil.
Yep, those giant tanks that the lorry would come and fill up. I remember it well. Yep.
Yeah, it's so expensive to live in a house like that. And, like, I don't live in a house like that now, but I can just imagine. Like, I mean, Norfolk is very rural. We have lots of houses here who are on that heating oil. And I we're already in a highly deprived area.
Right.
Of the country. And so I could just see how this is going to continue to add to the burden of cost onto normal, everyday people.
What do you think the answer is then?
Well, I think what the right thing to do is to have a kind of survey of what's possible in the North Sea and weigh up some of that, the environmental issues and impact related to the kind of cost that people will incur if the fighting in the Middle East continues.
I'm picking up from your accent, you're North American, you're probably from the US, I would guess.
I'm half American, half English.
Okay, your US half, would you support fracking?
No.
Why, in the UK, I mean. Why not?
No, because the damage to groundwater contamination and things like that would be too high.
Has that been absolutely proven lastly, Shannon?
I don't think that it's been proven 100%. I think that there's quite a few studies out there that show that there's about 80% reliability on some of like what we know happens to groundwater contamination around areas that have been fracked, but also earthquakes. I did grow up in Texas, and I lived in Oklahoma for a while.
Oh, right.
And we do have like mini earthquakes when there's fracking happening.
Shannon, I've enjoyed our conversation. Stay safe in Norwich. Talking about these prices, Gary says, Gary in Chesterfield, my fuel has gone up 13p on diesel, 11p on petroleum. Chris at Heathrow, you're talking about how the war will feed through to pump prices. They're already 6 to 7p a litre more than before it started. That's Chris in Heathrow. By the way, on a related conversation, I've just finished watching a great series on Paramount called Landman with, is it Billy Bob Thornton? Is that how you pronounce it? And Demi Moore? Wow. You learn a lot about the oil industry there. Got nothing to do. Take an episode of Landman, see how you get on. Right, as I've told you about on a number of occasions, it's a key debate today for online safety and online campaigners. The mother of murdered teenager Brianna Jai is urging MPs to back a Commons vote to protect children from social media harms without delay. This is as the Lords have sent legislation back, and that vote, of course, or debate takes place today. So let's bring into the conversation an online safety campaigner, Ellen Room, who sadly lost her teenage son a number of years ago. Thank you for coming on. Can I call you Ellen? I don't want to be too forward. Okay, Ellen, no, thank you. You'll have been asked this so many times, and the pain will get no less raw each time you're asked. Obviously, I have to ask the consequences concerning your boy, Ellen.
So back in April 22, I came home to find Jules not breathing. We had an inquest and there was nothing ruled offline as to his mental health issues. There was no mental health issues. There was no sign of any bullying. And then I said, well, what happened online? And I was forbidden to see any details. As a parent, you have no legal right to see what your children look at online. So I started campaigning for something called Jules Law, which is going through. And Liz Kendall, the Secretary of State, told me that will be passed. So when a child dies, their online data will be saved within 5 days so that no other parent is in my position.
Why is that important to you, Ellen?
Because there was nothing found offline. So what on earth happened to him? I don't believe a normal 14-year-old child that presents with no mental health issues suddenly decides, within an hour and a half of saying goodbye to his best friend, which is on our camera, to suddenly take his life. Something happened. And whether that be in his text messages, whether it be a blackout challenge, which I assumed it was initially, but we still haven't been able to get that data from TikTok. We are suing TikTok. None of the social media companies would give me his browsing data or his messages. If they had nothing to hide, why would they not hand it over and say, you know, here's his data, I hope you get some answers?
Can the police not demand powers of seizure, or even Ofcom demand powers of seizure?
Well, the law has changed since when Jules died. There's the Data Use and Access Act, which, if the coroner asks for it, which is why I pushed so heavily to make it automatic, but the police and the coroner, well, it has to come via the coroner to Ofcom to preserve and request that data. The problem is I'm contacted weekly by parents of children that are dying saying this isn't happening, which is why I pushed for it to be automatic. And once that gets royal assent, it will be automatic that data is preserved. But we all know there is harmful data on these platforms. We just need to prove it. And then once we can prove what our children are saying, we can hold these companies properly accountable.
The young lad, 14, I imagine, like every other 14-year-old, he spent a lot of time on social media.
He did, yeah. And more so in lockdown because he was an only child. And I was perhaps a naive parent back in 2020 to not know the harms. Nowadays, we're all talking about it. But I still come across parents now that I try desperately to educate on things like Snapchat, live location. You've got children being followed by paedophiles and drug dealers knowing within a foot of where your children are. That can't be right to have children on these platforms. And we've got, you know, the government saying there's going to be this consultation. I really would urge MPs today to back for getting rid of it, to raise the age to 16. We have time and time again proved the harms songs on these platforms, the MPs just need to stand up and say enough, take it away. And if the social media companies can prove that their platforms are safe, hey, we can consider giving it back. But it's up to the technology companies now to remove it and get their platforms safe.
If a sliver of light can come out of the extraordinary gloom that's been visited upon you, your campaigning is going extraordinarily well. I understand you've been in contact with Prince Harry, is that right?
Yes, I've met him twice, actually, over in America. So I've been over to America twice to support the American bereaved families. This is a global problem. It's not just the UK. And I've taken my campaign international to prove that this is a bigger problem. We are all talking about the harms. Please, please, UK government, step up and do something about it, not just debate it for a bit longer.
I think you're probably aware it's Online Safety Day. It's the third Online Safety Day we've conducted here at LBC. And as part of that, I've been speaking with Dame Melanie Dawes, who, just to remind my listeners, she's Chief Executive Head of Ofcom, and she's told me in an interview I conducted last week that actually we're ahead of almost every other country on the planet in our legislation and the fines that we levy. You're sadly very close to this. Would you concur with that?
No, I wouldn't. No, I wouldn't.
What happens in the US, Ellen?
Well, in the US, yes, they can't get the data, and we are ahead of it with regards to preserving the data and being able to hold them accountable. That is fantastic. But in the US, you do have a lot of problems, the same as we are having, but they're still trying to push for the COSTA Act out there, which, so I guess we're ahead on some things, but it's not enough. We have still got children being harmed. I was phoned last week by the mother of a child who's 15-year-old who's just taken his life, and hearing the rawness in her voice, it took me back to the day that Jules died. And you've got children being harmed or dying, and it's still happening. And that's wrong. If we can switch it off, just switch it off, and the technology companies, you fix it, I think that's got to be the way forward. And, you know, I take my hat off to Australia, the fact that they've stood up and done this. And it may not be perfect. You may get some children that fall through the net, but, you know, the majority of children are being protective, and I wish we would do things a bit quicker here.
You're seeking for your son's inquest to be reheard. If that's correct, why?
Because I can then use the law. So I wrote to the Attorney General, or my barrister did, Harry Lambert, 13 weeks ago. They haven't responded yet. So we have to get the Attorney General to grant permission, and then we have to apply to the High Court. But then I can use the new Data Use and Access Act to demand social media companies release that data. I want to know why my 14-year-old child isn't alive. And whilst there's a law there that I could use to possibly get answers, then I want to try it. But I'm still waiting for the Attorney General to respond, and that's incredible. Incredibly frustrating.
When did your letter go in?
13 weeks ago.
Well, so I think LBC needs to make a call. We'll, if you have a brief word with my reporter, just get the details. We'll definitely put a call into the office. Lastly, amazing. You've referenced this online challenge, and I've told you it's Online Safety Day, and an LBC investigation has found that the challenge is linked to the deaths of several British children is still on TikTok. It's, as you said, the blackout challenge. Our reporter, LBC's Theo Rickards, found videos like those still on social media. To you, Emma, campaigning in this field almost 4 years on, how do you react to that, that it's still out there and it can still be sought?
I've sat in meetings with TikTok in Parliament before, and there's various challenges. We have told them time and time again it's still on their platform. And it just frustrates me that we've got children seeing things like this. I mean, we've got children seeing things like, you know, live shootings. You know, I don't want to see that as an adult. I don't want children to see it. People are seeing beheadings. I mean, what on earth are we doing allowing children on these platforms to see this sort of things? And the fact that they've got challenges on their platform, they know they've got challenges on their platform. Yes, they'll argue that it's not there, but they do. And actually, I wish they had a bit more moral grounding to say they need to step up and do more to protect the children on their platforms.
It's been a privilege to speak to you for all the wrong reasons, obviously. If I could ask you just to stay on the line, we're going to take a note of that, and then we'll put a call into the Attorney General's office. Thank you to you, Ellen Room, the campaigner who lost her son Jules, aged 14. It's 9:30. Breakfast with me, Nick Ferrara, here on LBC Newstime. Dominic Ellis.
A cabinet minister has told Nick the government is monitoring oil prices after they soared overnight due to the Iran conflict. They exceeded $100 a barrel for the first time since in nearly 4 years. The Chancellor Rachel Reeves is to take part in an emergency meeting with G7 finance ministers to discuss an action plan later. LBC can exclusively reveal only one tech company has paid a fine for breaking the Online Safety Act a year after it came into force. Ofcom has issued six firms penalties, totalling more than £3 million for things like not putting proper age checks on their sites. And it's unclear when Scotland's busiest railway station, Glasgow Central, will reopen following a nearby fire. Services aren't stopping there after the fire broke out yesterday in a vape shop. LBC weather cloudy but dry for most. Some patchy rain in the west, a high of 15 degrees.
Hear every side of the story. LBC.
You've probably been with the same energy supplier for decades. And why wouldn't you be? Loyalty matters. But lately, bigger hasn't always felt better. You've probably dealt with long waits and endless automated menus in search of someone who can actually help. Octopus Energy is now Britain's biggest energy supplier, trusted by over 8 million customers, because we do things differently. Our people focus on the most important thing, you. When you call, you'll speak to a real person. No robotic scripts, no computer says no, just an honest conversation with someone who actually wants to help. Join the millions who've already made the move. Octopus Energy, recommended by Which, a record 9 years running. Visit octopus.energy/better for verification.
When you're smiling.
Banning Dental Group Clinics, with over 5,000 top-rated Google reviews. Keep on smiling.
For the nappies, peekaboos and tea parties. Mess, tantrums and sleepless nights. All those yo-yos, action figures and shinies. Lifts to mates, lifts to parties, lifts everywhere. For each and every one of those teenage years. Let's be honest. You probably owe your parents one. So tell them about pension credit. It could boost their pension income by an average of over £4,000 a year. Pension credit. Credit where credit's due. Eligibility criteria apply.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
How cohesive is your community? How tight do you feel in your community? We're going to be talking about that in just a moment. But if you're listening, we'll come back to North Seal with you, David, in Bath in a moment. If you're listening in Crowborough, or you perhaps you've come from Crowborough, you come into town to do work, whatever. If you're listening in parts of Glasgow, with events at the football yesterday. If you're listening in parts of North London, where the demonstration kicked off for the pro and anti-Iranian regime. When you hear the government talking about putting in, what was it? £5 billion into fostering community cohesion. What needs to be done? How cohesive, how tight, how closely bound is your community? Or is it, sadly, perhaps fracturing? We'll come to that plan in a moment. But we're talking about North Sea Oil, because, as everybody knows, we told you in the first hour, sadly, even as I'm watching one of the news stations now, it's saying that oil price is increasing. It's whether we now try and get more out of the North Sea. David in Bath. David, what would you say? Good morning.
Morning, Nick. Yes, I agree that we should be pumping more oil and gas, gas especially, because we need to stop having those global prices affecting everything.
But what about the ecological side? What about the fact that some of it is going to be very a long way off before we've got to identify, explore it and drill it?
Well, everything's a long way off. A lot of the oil and fuel that we've got in this country is sitting there just waiting to be exploited. The environmental costs, windmills, solar panels, those types of things, they're just ruining the landscape. Things like lime down should be stopped.
Things like what, sorry? What did you say?
Lime down. The lime down solar panels that they're going to put all over Wiltshire.
Oh, right, okay. Gosh, I haven't been to Wiltshire in ages. Right, okay, and that's not far from you. So tell me what's happening in Wiltshire.
So the company Macquarie in Australia is behind this. They're the same company that were with the London Water fiasco.
Oh, right. They've got a chunk of Thames Water, have they?
They did have.
Right.
And they are going to take all of the fertile land, a lot of the land and a whole bunch of communities around Chippenham, and put solar panels there. That then becomes green, no longer becomes greenfield, it becomes greyfield, which will then be used for housing.
I see. Now, this is an area, obviously, in which you have an interest. The ultimate goal of some of the government's plans are, of course, ultimately, to have us all in electric cars, electric vans, electric whatever it might be, and to have heat pumps. How doable, how realistic are those plans, David?
I don't think electric cars are ever going to be able to carry on the way that they are. If you do long journeys, you just can't. You can't do it. If you tow things like trailers, caravans, equipment, you can't do it with electric. You can't get up to the from the south to the north of the country without having to stop and refuel with electricity.
Thanks for your input, David. Going to talk community cohesion in just a moment. But in the previous hour, we talked about Timothy Chalamet, a leading contender for an Oscar, saying that no one really was interested in opera and ballet. My goodness me, that's got some reaction. Adam in Cheshire, I'm a 32-year-old doctor. I love opera and classical. I hope to pass it on to my daughter and soon-to-be son. These are talents and musical gifts from generations past. Matt in Sidcup, give me Caruso over some jumped-up little Wally playing dress-up and let's pretend any day. He wishes he was talented enough to perform opera, let alone ballet. This comes in from Nicola. I care deeply about opera, ballet, classical music, theatre, literature. Teaching the arts to children provides valuable life skills, cooperation, creativity, respect, sharing, expression, humility, confidence, collaboration. I will stop there. Nicola, point has been made. And Andy says, the Italian rugby team were singing Nessun Dorma after beating England at the weekend. Opera is still alive. Sadly, English rugby is not. That was well done, Italy, though. I don't want in any way to disparage that. Although the game to watch was Scotland-France. 90 points. And to score 40 and not win, you know, to be the French team. We got 40 points and we still lost. What an extraordinary game rugby is. Let's go to other matters. I'm calling out for you if you're in Crowborough. How's the community out there? Epping, nearly said Wapping. Epping out in Essex. How's things out there? How are you in parts of Glasgow this morning, waking up after that football match? How are you in parts of North London, where there was a confrontation and a reported stabbing in pro-Iranian and anti-Iranian regime demonstrations? We are a little bit split, aren't we? Well, the government wants to do something about it, with £5 billion behind it. In the previous hour of the show, I spoke with the Secretary of State for Housing, Communities and Local Government, Steve Reid. He was talking about this new government plan to boost social cohesion and therefore tackle extremism. It involves setting up a new whistleblowing route for university staff and giving the Charity Commission powers to shut down charities to help block extremism. Here's a little of the background from Steve Reid.
People are aware of some of these forces that are trying to pull communities apart, trying to pull people apart from each other, and we call that social cohesion. We need, as a government, to make sure that we are doing what is necessary to tackle the problems causing those divisions, but also supporting people to come together. So, you know, some of the points that you just made, I won't repeat those, but, you know, we inherited a policy from the previous government over asylum seeker hotels that have proved very divisive in their localities. So the government needs to take action to tackle the use of hotels for those purposes. But we also can do more to bring communities together. So you take our Pride in Place programme, for instance, which provides up to £20 million to up to 300 of our most held-back communities. Local people will get to choose how that money is spent to improve their area and pride back into the area. Now, whatever backgrounds people have living in those places, and however different they are, they all have a shared interest in making their community, their hometown, as successful and prosperous as it can be. So by putting in place funding to support initiatives like that, we're building the bridges that bring people back together again.
How much money are we talking about, Secretary of State?
Well, in that case, it's £5 billion. But this isn't just a single funding pot. This is an approach that we want to take all the way across government. So let's take extremist hate preachers, for instance, who might be coming into the country to sow division. The Home Office is strengthening the watch list so those individuals can be kept from coming into our country. The Charities Commission will be given more powers to close down charities, organisations masquerading as charities that are actually spreading hatred and division. So this is something that will affect the whole of government, not just one department.
And how quickly might some of those charities be closed? Once the case is proven, how quickly might some of those charities be closed down?
Well, we're publishing the report today. There will be a consultation, a review, based on it. The powers that will go to the Charities Commission will work through with the relevant government department and them, but we want to see this brought in as quickly as it can be. There are many people, many forces, some here, many abroad, that want to pull our society apart, to weaken the country. And we know that the UK is strongest when we all stand together and we recognise what we have in common, not just those things that make us different from each other.
How will we know if these initiatives that you're outlining through the course of the day, how will we know if they're working?
Well, we'll be publishing proposals for a social cohesion framework. Really, that's a series of different measures that we can look at to give information as to whether the country is more united, whether social cohesion is strengthened or not. But fundamentally, I mean, for me, I think this is something people feel or don't feel. You see it on your own doorstep. You see it in your own community. If you've got people, you know, coming into the country and they can't, for instance, speak English, how can you have a function functioning community where people don't share a single language. So there will be more focus on learning the English language. So we have a shared language, but also it protects individuals who are coming here that may be experiencing quite often quite severe problems or forms of abuse. They can't report it if they don't have a shared language. Now, when I was younger, when I was a student, I used to volunteer to teach English to refugees at the Northern Refugee Centre in Sheffield. That was great because it helped teach people English, but I, as the volunteer, also learned a lot.
We're going to end there. We're going to end there because we can go straight to Sir Keir Starmer, who's talking live at a community centre in London.
Around the clock in relation to those operations. The third area I just wanted to address, because I think as we go into this sort of what feels like the second week of this conflict, a lot of people are going to begin to think, well, that's happening out in Iran and in the Gulf states, but I can sense it's going to affect me back here in the United Kingdom, particularly the economy. We've done a lot of work recently on the cost of living, which we know is the number one issue for so many people across the country, and an anxiety about that. On the reassurance front, I think it is important just to remind ourselves that last time a conflict began to develop, which was 2022, in relation to Ukraine, the economy wasn't in a stable place, and inflation was 5% and rising. We've done a lot of work in the last 18 months to put some resilience in and make sure that we've got some headroom, which is basically some insurance within the economy, but also inflation is 3% and going down. So in that sense, there's more resilience. But the job of government is obviously to get ahead, to look around the corner, to work with others. And the Chancellor speaks to the Governor of the Bank of England on a daily basis. We're looking cross-departmental within government, assessing the risks, monitoring, and talking to our international partners as well about what more we can do together to reduce the likely impact on people here and businesses here, of course. But it is important to acknowledge that that work is needed, because people will sense, you will sense, I think, that the longer this goes on, the more likely the potential for an impact on our economy, impact into the lives and households of everybody and every business. And our job is to get ahead of that, to look round the corner, assess the risk, monitor the risks and work with others in relation to that. And then the final thing I just wanted to talk to you about, and we're going to have a Q&A in a minute so I can get the benefit of your views, which will be really helpful from my point of view, is this really sad feature in many ways of a conflict like this, which is some people will try to use it to divide communities in this country and tear people apart. And we mustn't let that happen. I find one of the most powerful arguments that if you think of all the people who are stuck in the region, anxious about their own safety, wanting to get home, they come from all backgrounds. They come from all walks of life. And the last thing they want, or their families here want, is anybody trying to divide. Because this is a time when we need to come together as a country, stand behind our principles and our values, and not let people divide us. Put a lot of reassurance work in with both the Muslim community and the Jewish community in particular, because that's where people seek to try and find a divide. But we're also setting out our social cohesion plan today, which is a broader piece of work about how we bring people together as a country, make sure that we build on what we all care about, which is very much pride in our communities, pride in who we are as a country, pride, of course, in the places that we all come from. Everyone has got a pride about where they come from. And that real sense of making sure that we do integrate and we're one country standing together, particularly at a time like this, and that we bear down on extremism and division, because it's very important all the time to do that. It's particularly important at the moment. And so that's what we're doing as we turn into this week. So I think what you'll see is the focus going more to what impact might this have back in the United Kingdom. This will be happening across all countries, really, and really to reassure you about the work the government is doing to get ahead of that and to monitor the risk assess the risk and work with others across our own government, but actually with other countries. Part of the response at a time like this has to be constantly talking to leaders in other countries, particularly in the region, but also across Europe when it comes to the economy and other measures. So that's all I'll say for now. I think I've got some questions from you. So this is your chance. Anybody got any questions that they want to ask? I think we'll do the old-fashioned way of putting a hand up, if that's all right. Yes, I'll try and do a question behind me while facing this way. It's always a skill, but hopefully I can master it. I think we've got a microphone coming for you so you can be heard.
Is that okay?
Yeah, we can hear you.
Good morning. My question is, what are you doing to bring communities together in this world that is so divided, and what is in place?
Yeah, this is really important. I mean, it is a really sad feature, isn't it, of a time like this, that some people will try and use it as an opportunity to divide. So
let's break off from the Prime Minister. He's at a community centre in London. Strangely, he's talking about the whole idea and issue and policies that were outlined by Steve Reid when we broke into that conversation. Just briefly then, before we give you a full news update, the Prime Minister's talking about around roughly 300,000 people in the area. He said he's quite very, very concerned about their safety. He indicated around 35,000 have expressed interest in coming back, and he said, we are doing all we can. Well, you managed to get 80 out on one aircraft last week. The rest, I would suggest, is being done by airlines. Then he addressed the cost of living. He said he thinks it's the number one issue for the people there and indeed for everyone in the country. He pointed out the last conflict of this sort was in 2022, Ukraine. He says the economy wasn't as stable then as it is now. He says that they've been working very hard, the government, to bring in resilience, to bring in something called financial headroom. He also pointed out that inflation then was running at 5%. It's currently at 3% and falling. So he said that would put us in a better place. He says he wants to be sure that they can get ahead. Their job is to look around the corners. He said also be aware of the potential impact it could have on our economy. He then talked, and this is very much about this social cohesion plan, about how we have to be aware of people who try to divide and tear people apart. He also said that there are people who are stuck in the region and they come from all backgrounds. He urged that we, and I quote, we need to come together, not let people divide us. He talked about social cohesion. He talked on bearing down on all extremism and how it's important we come together. So that's at a community centre in London. We might pick up on that, but we are at 9:48, LBC News headlines then. Dominic Ellis.
Keir Starmer has promised to protect households from rising costs as the Iran conflict pushes up oil prices. LBC can exclusively reveal only one tech company has paid a fine for breaking the Online Safety Act a year after it came into force. And it's unclear when Scotland's busiest railway station, Glasgow Central, will reopen following a nearby fire. LBC weather cloudy but dry for most, some patchy rain in the west, a high of 15 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. On the trains, Chiltern Railway services remain suspended between Marylebone and High Wycombe. It's because of an ongoing investigation. On the Underground, there are severe delays on the Circle, Hammersmith and City, Metropolitan and Piccadilly lines. On the roads, the M40 remains closed southbound between junctions 9 at Bicester and 8A at the Oxford services. That's following an accident. Very busy on the M1 southbound to junction 8 at Hemel Hempstead, also after an accident. No Woolwich Ferry running because of the fog. And also because of the fog, there's various delays and cancellations at London City Airport and at Stansted and Gatwick as well. And some flights have had to be cancelled.
Coming up at 10 on LBC, James O'Brien.
Just when you thought the case for joining Trump and Netanyahu's war in Iran couldn't get any weaker, up pops Tony Blair to endorse the idea. And social media for under-16s. Is the ban going to happen?
James O'Brien at 10. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
My beans have been to Mexico. They once went to Peru. My beans, they flew to Portugal, then went to Tuvalu. My beans were with me in Italy, then came with me to Greece. I slurped their sauce on Spanish shores. I nibbled them in Nice. My Heinz beans have seen the world. They've travelled far and wide because they are, as we all know, too good to leave behind.
Okay, let me stop you there, sir. You still have to check them into the hold.
Oh, all right then. Honestly.
Beans means Heinz. This is LBC. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app. Download it now from your app store.
Go from someday to sunny days in Greece
with package holidays from £329 per person. So stop dreaming of souvlaki. Stop scrolling crystal clear beaches. Search EasyJet Holidays and get your holiday in Greece sorted today. Get out there. Selected dates April to September. Limited availability. Adult protected. T's and C's apply.
So, what's on your to-do list today? Why don't you check if you're eligible for pension credit? It tops up your pension income and also opens up help with heating bills, council tax, and more. Search pension credit on gov.uk or call 0800 99 1234. There's nothing to lose. Check today. Pension credit. Credit where credit's due. Eligibility criteria apply.
If you were missold a home on a holiday park, holidayparkadvicecentre.co.uk could help you receive compensation. Text ADVICE to 78900.
It's hard to concentrate when you can't shake a health worry. It can feel like there's a wall between you and the rest of the world. Like you can't be fully present.
Hello, AXA Health. How can I help?
If something's playing on your mind, AXA Health support line nurses and counsellors are ready to listen day or night. For cover that cares, search AXA Health Insurance. 24/7 health support line available to all members. Treatment for pre-existing conditions is not covered.
This year at Amazon, we're increasing the electric vehicles used for deliveries across Europe to over 10,000. It's a difference you'll notice on your doorstep, where babies are made a fuss of, where we deliver footballs for kids' kickabouts, and where they deliver the football straight into next door's garden.
Can they have their ball back, please?
We're delivering change where it matters, on your doorstep. Based on projected delivery service partner vehicles across the UK and EU by end of 2026.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
Will continue to monitor what the Prime Minister says in this community centre in London, this idea of a social cohesion put forward by his senior colleague Steve Reid, and pick up on that, give you a recap, because I want to come back to my final part, but of course we will be doing Online Safety Day throughout the course of the day. I told you again, that key debate in the House of Commons for campaigners. Now, you may recall when we've done online safety before, my LBC colleague Henry Riley conducted an experiment to see the sort of content to which you could be exposed as a 13-year-old girl on the social media site TikTok, and the results then were shocking. We repeated the task 6 months later in September to see what it would be like for a 13-year-old boy. Now, a year on from the Online Safety Act, has anything changed? Well, again, to LBC's Henry Riley. He's been looking into this and joins me in the studio now with the report. Henry, good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Yes, as you mentioned, we've decided to try again as both a 13-year-old boy and girl of the same age, setting up two new accounts and seeing what we were served from the algorithm. Now, our teenage girl was allowed to search for certain terms, so we explored themes like skinny, for example. But our boy, after putting our interests as football and videos, we were only viewing posts that were suggested by the algorithm. This is some of what we found. Let's see what we get.
I don't want us to get caught by like security or anything.
Wow. The first video I'm seeing, and I need to be careful here, is a sexual act. I just want to see the number go down again, and it's someone who looks very skinny, and that is with regards to the number that you weigh. Let's keep scrolling. Wow. All the makeup in the world won't make you less insecure. Now, it helps with the video, Nick, but you can see their teenage girl exposed to content glorifying eating disorders, suicide ideation, racist symbols. I mean, for a 13-year-old girl, we were served everything from golly dolls to Bernard Manning.
No.
Yeah, which is bizarre, isn't it?
From the 70s.
Yeah. For our teenage boy, there was a huge amount of over-sexualised, inappropriate content, and that's worrying, given around a quarter of TikTok's UK users are under the age of 17. Now, Asger Nim is from the Danish non-profit organisation Digital Accountability. He told us that social media sites are still clearly not taking enough responsibility.
Why don't TikTok in this instance not improve in their content moderation or in their algorithmic systems? They have a responsibility, but they choose not to. And I believe a very likely hypothesis is that the reason why it keeps amplifying this content is because the user has shown an interest, and the platforms, they care more about continuing user engagement than keeping their users safe.
Now, it's understood over 200 million posts that violated TikTok's guidelines were removed between July and September last year. We have put our findings to TikTok. A spokesperson said, ensuring that TikTok continues to be safe for our community is our most important work, and teen accounts on TikTok have more than 50 present features and settings designed specifically to support their safety and well-being. They added, we believe it's the best way to tackle online harm is to prevent it from occurring in the first place, and of the content we remove for breaking our rules, 99% is taken down before it is reported to us. And of course, Nick, you put some of our findings to the Ofcom chief executive, Dame Melanie Dawes.
With one search of the term skinny, we were deluged with posts glorifying eating disorders, one with the song lyrics, and I quote, if they say to kill yourself, then you will try it. The world's not getting safer for children if we get that with a few clicks, is it?
No, I mean, that's just...
So that's a fail,
no,
isn't it?
Well, that's definitely a fail by that platform, yes. And I don't know, that when we last spoke, that was a little while ago.
Yes, it was.
These companies are absolutely under an obligation to make sure that if they have under 18s on their platform, that pro-suicide material like that is not shown at all to those young people. So that's the test. And our question at Ofcom that we are, you know, rigorously going through with them at the moment is, are they meeting it? As I say, they're all wanting to comply. That's what they would tell you.
How did my colleague?
It's about whether they're really doing it.
Then I know you don't know the individual circumstances, and I'm sure you'll take it away and you'll look at it. But how did my colleague pose with such ease as a 13-year-old girl and get that from TikTok then?
Well, one of the things we need to see is much, much better age checks.
Dame Melanie Dawes speaking with you earlier. Nick, I've just looked at the 13-year-old boy account. Bearing in mind on this, we've done no searches, this sort of organic content, and we're already getting searches like, I mean, videos like that, just to pass you the phone.
Right.
Which...
This shows a young girl engaging in a sexual act with some text running across the screen.
Yeah, and for a 13-year-old boy, Nick, and that's the one where we haven't done searches, it clearly points to some pretty worrying findings.
All right, now you can watch Henry Riley's investigation on the LBC website, our app, and, of course, our social media channels. One of the many questions, I'm sure, for Technology Secretary Liz Kendall. Now, Liz Kendall is joining my colleague Sheila Fogarty from One to take your call, so be sure to get involved there. In the last 40 seconds or so, I'll just recap. Henry Riley, thanks for your report, sorry. Just recap, Keir Starmer talking about how he's reassuring the people. He's addressing 300,000 Britons in the Middle East. He said, I know the friends and family of this country are very, very concerned. They want to know their loved ones are safe. It's not easy getting them back because the airspace is closed. We've got 35,000 back so far, says the Prime Minister. Well, last week you had 80 on one plane. I think Oman Air and Emirates probably doing more of the heavy lifting there. But he talked about how the government is working around the clock, admitted the war in the Middle East will likely impact people in the UK, but the government is working to consider that, to try and remedy that. He also talked about how we're in a better position are we with inflation now than the Ukraine conflict in 2022, because at that time he said inflation was at 5%, it's now at 3%, and it is falling. That's a summary of what the Prime Minister has just said. If you miss any of today's show, listen back on our free Global Player or on the LBC app, where you can also stay up to date with all the latest news, videos and opinions. Download the official LBC app for free from your app store now. That's it. James O'Brien's The Other Side of the News on LBC. I'm back with you tomorrow morning from 7. Meantime, stay safe.
Thank you, Nick. The time is approaching 10 o'clock and you are listening to LBC 97. Well, it's not called that anymore, is it? Here's the thing. Best case scenario now? Probably that Donald Trump calls the whole thing off and then asks us all to join him in colluding in the pretense that it never happened. And you can't rule anything out, as we've said on many occasions with this character. He could claim, for example, that he has been completely exonerated by events as he continues to do incomplete ignorance of the truth with regards to the Epstein files. He could claim a glorious victory because, of course, neither he nor any of the warmongering saber rattlers on this side of the Atlantic have been able to clearly articulate precisely why he undertook this war in the first place. But he ain't going to do it. So up comes Tony Blair.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From
on Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock. The Prime Minister has promised to protect households from spiralling costs as the Iran conflict pushes up oil prices. Overnight, they exceeded $100 a barrel for the first time since 2022. The FTSE 100 index fell sharply on opening this morning. A short time ago, it was down 1.2%. Speaking during a visit to a community centre in London this morning, Sir Keir Starmer says he's keeping a close eye on the situation.
On the reassurance front, I think it is important just to remind ourselves that last time a conflict began to develop, which was 2022 in relation to Ukraine, the economy wasn't in a stable place and inflation was 5% and rising. We've done a lot of work in the last 18 months to put some resilience in and make sure that we've got some headroom, which is basically some insurance within the economy.
The Chancellor, Rachel Reeves, is expected to join a virtual meeting of G7 finance ministers later to discuss a potential joint release of oil reserves. In other news this morning, LBC can exclusively reveal just one tech company has paid a fine for breaking online safety rules a year after they came in. Ofcom has issued six firms with penalties, totalling more than £3 million, but only £55,000 of that has been paid. The regulator insists it's still a deterrent. Online safety campaigner Ellen Room has told LBC she wants to see even tougher powers.
We've got, you know, the government saying there's going to be this consultation. I really would urge MPs today to back for getting rid of it, to raise the age to 16. We have time and time again proved the harms on these platforms. The MPs just need to stand up and say enough, take it away. And if the social media companies can prove that their platforms are safe, hey, we can consider giving it back. But it's up to the technology companies now to remove it and get their platforms safe.
You can read more on LBC's Online Safety Day on the LBC app. And it's unclear when Scotland's busiest railway station, Glasgow Central, will reopen following a nearby fire. Services are not stopping there after the fire broke out yesterday in a vape shop. In the city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading down 132 points at 10,151. The pound buys $1.33 and €1.15. LBC weather, cloudy but dry for most. Some patchy rain in the west, a high of 15 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Sorry to interrupt your day, but I've just been diagnosed with dementia and I'm going to need your help. I'll need help when I can no longer button a shirt or recognise my own family. My daughter will need help too. I worry this could ruin her life. And we will all need help to find a cure to end the devastation of dementia. I can't do this alone.
It will take a society to beat dementia. Alzheimer's Society.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
It's 3 minutes after ten. Who had that on their bingo card? Tony Blair weighs in on the war in Iran, the unfolding war in Iran. I certainly didn't. And that's probably going to be our phone in this morning. I mean, what for the first hour at least? What made you? How did you respond to the news? Some of the contortions are extraordinary, aren't they? It's the Daily Mail in particular, as ever. And yes, I am a little bit obsessed. Do you know why I'm a little bit obsessed with the Daily Mail? Are you interested? I'll tell you why. I mean, it's a dwindling organ, which has less and less relevance and fewer readers every day. But of course, it still dictates public discourse. But the real reason I'm fascinated by it is because of this job. When I started doing this job, I encountered, pretty much for the first time in my life, people whose lives were being ruined by their opinions. People whose lives and families were being ruined by their beliefs. This was before Brexit even happened, but you would speak to people whose mums or dads were absolutely convinced that the fact that a family of colour had moved in next door was the end of civilization as they knew it. You would speak to people, and when they rang me, that to explain why they hated immigrants or why they hated the EU. And what I realised was that they had been gaslit over decades into not only believing things that were not true, but into using those things to vote against their own interests, to vote literally for things that would make their own lives worse. You see it a little bit this week with the call from the right-wing media and others to join Donald Trump's ludicrous war in Iran. Donald Trump and Benjamin Netanyahu's ludicrous war in Iran. And they can't really tell you why they're in favour of it, including a lot of the pundits. They give you a reason for why they're in favour of the war, and the very next day Donald Trump will say, no, that's not why we're going to war at all. So you see it happening all the time. And that's why I'm mildly... I'm not even mild. That's why I'm professionally obsessed with it. I don't give it a great deal of thought when I'm not here or messing around on social media, but that's why. I remember someone telling me a story some time ago about Fox News in the United States of America. And if you ever wondered why we don't have a Fox News equivalent in this country, in terms of popularity, GBB's obviously nibbles at the same territory, nibbles at the same food, but doesn't enjoy anything like the... dominance that Fox News enjoys. The reason why Fox News never really landed in this country is because we already had the Daily Mail. We already had a hideously right-wing organization polluting public discourse, promoting evil people, and persuading populations to vote to keep people like the owners of the Daily Mail in power and in wealth. It really is that simple. And I remember someone telling me years ago that Fox News, when Barack Obama was president, was it a caller to this program or was it somebody I met outside of the studio? I can't actually remember. That their family, their parents had buried their jewelry in the back garden because they'd seen a guest on Fox News claiming that Barack Obama, I think personally, I don't think they were even going to send agents to do it. Barack Obama was going to steal their jewellery in order to fund welfare payments for immigrants or some absolutely bonkers story like that. And that's why I have an enduring fascination with far-right media and evil commentators and columnists, because they ruin life for everybody, even those of us who can see through their hideous lies. And of course, a lot of them can't. I mean, where, for example, is the line? There's some figures today published with regard to immigration. More people have come into the country, the increase in non-EU migration actually overtakes the decrease in EU migration, the latest numbers show. They're both just shy of a million, but the drop in EU migration is more or less entirely filled by the rise in non-EU migration, albeit that the rise in non-EU migration is actually a little bigger than the drop in EU migration, which means, of course, that an awful lot of people from Asian countries, from the subcontinent and from Africa are coming here to fill jobs that were previously done by Europeans, which means, of course, that the preponderance of people who are not white is rising in our workforce as a direct consequence of Brexit. Do you think... this is what I mean by sometimes not knowing whether they're evil or stupid or both. Do you think Nigel Farage knew that this was going to happen and lied about it because his political project will be greatly enhanced by an increase in brown and black faces on supermarket checkouts or, of course, in adverts, as his colleague has already complained about in very hysterical terms? Do you think he knew that there was going to be a massive uptick in immigration generally and ethnic minority immigration in particular? Or do you think he was too stupid to understand what he was encouraging your mum to vote for? Genuine question. We'll never know the answer. I mean, was he diabolically evil, hoping for a massive uptick in ethnic minority immigration because that powers his political fraud machine? Or he just didn't understand what Brexit would mean in the context of the workforce and was too stupid to grasp what it was that he was going to be directly responsible for? I don't know. We may never know. Speaking of things that we are deriving no pleasure whatsoever from being right about, the introduction I did this time last week about the media's inability to cope with Donald Trump, and this isn't even a criticism because we're all guilty of it, the fact that you cannot not treat the President of the United States of America as one of the most